the download, Metropolitan Planning Council's Mary Sue Barrett, Nerds on Tour's Abraham Levitin, and live updates from the Republican National Convention. And now here's your host, a man who thought political plagiarizing was a form of flattery, Justin Kaufman.
Yeah, I thought it was like, you know, the badge of honor. I really like your ideas. I'm going to take them. Isn't that how it works? Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on 720 WGN with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We've got a wonderful show lined up for you on this, I guess, 2 days before the heat wave comes in. Once that storm hits, which I guess would be tomorrow, then it's going to be heat wave central. Tonight on the show, we're going to do what we did last night, since the first 2 days of the Republican National Convention, they're a little slower. You get some good speeches, and there's obviously some things that fireworks, especially when you're talking about what happened in day one. But tonight we'll do a regular show, and then at 10 o'clock we'll catch up and do some analysis and reaction to what happened at tonight's Republican National Convention with Charles Lipson, Chris Roebling, Congressman Randy Holcren's going to join us, Paris Schutz from WTTW. Plenty of people calling in and sort of wrapping up the day's activities. That's what we're going to do tonight at 10 o'clock. Coming up tonight at this hour, the 7 o'clock hour, we are going to talk about transportation in our segment, How to Improve. You know, I've been talking about this for a while, Pete, about sort of segment where we can really dig into the problems that are facing our city as we know it and the region. Last month, we had Mary Sue Barrett from the Metropolitan Planning Council on the program. We talked about government efficiency. Tonight, we're going to talk about transportation. How do we improve transportation in the region? Not just about how much money we need to update the infrastructure, but if we were really going to pull it back, what do we need to do to improve transportation? 312-981-7200. Love to have you be a part of that conversation. You can call or text. Pretty good at responding to texts. 312-981-7200. Also tonight, Abraham Levitin is back. We'll do our monthly segment, Nerds on Tour, where we look at issues in the music industry. And obviously the big one has to do with what we saw this week at the RNC, where members of the band Queen, Brian May, says he didn't want Queen to have anything to do with Donald Trump. But there's some legalities in question there. As we just heard Ro and Anna talking about that and Tom Skilling. There are some precedent, and because it is a broadcast, a live TV broadcast, there are some rules that say that Donald Trump can use whatever song he wants. We'll talk with Abraham about licensing and when somebody uses your music. Also, an interesting move by Warner Brothers Music to stop and close accounts for some small independent record stores. This is a big deal, and it does affect Chicago and some of the independent record stores that are here, and maybe the future of those stores as we know it. We'll talk to Abraham about that. Also tonight, the worst. It's Tuesday night. This is where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. You know what's the worst? Rabbits. I gotta get the the gardener from the Botanic Gardens in. We had him on, Jacob. We had him on last month. I'd love to talk to him again, because at the end I said, well, what can you do to stop rabbits? Because I got a lot of rabbits that are around my yard. It's like nothing. It's like they sell a deer repellent at the Home Depot that you can spray on your plants. So just this week, I came back from the weekend. It was my dad's 70th birthday. It was a big party up in Wisconsin. Happy birthday, Dad. And it was, you know, I got back. I was excited because earlier, or the weekend before, I went and bought, I guess it would be an annual plant that's just for 1 year to fill the spot where the hydrangea didn't work. It just didn't work. I've been complaining about it for a couple months. So I'm like, I'm just going to put this plant here, you know, potted plant. You know, obviously there's something wrong. I got to figure out what's wrong with my soil. So just do a potted plant to keep the nice, keep it nice and colorful.
Right.
Came back. Every single flower that was in that plant, we're talking, you know, 15 flowers, like a nice one, eaten, gone, nipped off.
You sure it was rabbits?
If it ain't rabbits, man, there's somebody who's like, petunias. Like someone ate them. It could have been a human. I don't want to judge. So today, this morning, I went to the Home Depot and I found what our gardener was talking about. It was like a deer and rabbit repellent. It's a spray, just like almost like a 404, you know, like kind of spray.
Sure.
Comet, whatever. I go out to the yard. I just spray with reckless abandon. Like, pow, pow, pow. I'm like Emilio Estevez in Young Guns. Everywhere, right? I'm like, yeah. And then I realize, oh, there's a weird smell to it. Because essentially it's not harmful to the plants, but it's enough for the rabbits. They're like, oh, it burns their nostrils. And they're like, I'm out. Forget this yard.
Let's
right?
go somewhere else.
That's what we were worried about because there's, you know, it felt like there were a couple rabbits there. I came outside right before I left to come into work, and there were no rabbits.
Great.
But they were replaced. And they were replaced by hundreds. And I'm not exaggerating. Hundreds of flies.
Oh, they like it.
Never had a fly in my yard. They now were like teeming on the plants. And I was like, what? So then I had to hose it off with water. So I essentially cleaned. I polished and cleaned my yard so the rabbits can return. Which would you rather have, rabbits or flies?
Well, are the flies only on the plants, or are they now are they flying around your house? Are they moving, or are they just around the plants?
No, they're like they landed on the plants.
Okay.
They are definitely licking whatever a fly does with their little arms. They're licking the deer repellent off of the plant.
So they're going to take it off. So then the rabbits will come back. And then it's annoying just to have so many flies around.
Yeah. So essentially the byproduct, the side effect of this repellent, it probably does keep the rabbits out of the yard. I haven't seen them. Obviously, it's only been a couple hours. But it was replaced by flies being like, dinner. And they're eating whatever that repellent is, which is probably some sort of urine. And it's causing another problem. I don't want my garden to be overrun with flies that are like it's some sort of, like a beehive.
Also put a fly repellent on?
I don't know. I'm about to give up on the whole thing. Just pave the whole thing.
No.
I'm going to pave it just as a nod to Joni Mitchell.
I'm sure this is a common problem of...
I feel very alone.
No.
If you're out there right now, and I know there's people, 312-981-7200, who've helped me and taken pictures of their gardens, and they've had this problem. Someone just said Farm and Fleet sells coyote urine that keeps rabbits away as well.
What about the flies now?
Now I got to figure out the flies. So that's my problem.
Or it could, maybe it's a brand. Maybe it, like the brand you bought is attracting the flies. If the coyote one.
Peter, it's $14. The brand.
Expensive?
Yeah. Wouldn't a spray of any kind be $14? I mean, I said it was about the size of like a comet, a spray. So anyway, I'm pretty bummed. I'll get over it. Talk to Mary Sue Barrett about our problems of transportation and then the music industry. And I'm over it. Tomorrow's a new day. But I'm not winning when it comes to my garden. And it's not really a garden. It's just it's more like plants in the front yard. And I've tried and tried and tried. I was optimistic about it, but I'm getting very pessimistic. So hopefully you can cheer me up tonight. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. 262 says maybe I should introduce frogs of all kinds to get rid of the flies. Then the rats will have a field day. 847 tells me chicken blood keeps rabbits out of gardens. I love it. Could help the yard. Rabbits hate marigolds. Add them to your plant pot. That's true. I've heard that. And what has Brian got? Brian, what do you got? What should I do with these rabbits? You there?
Yeah, I'm here. You can get a decent pellet gun at most hardware stores for under $100 and a decent filleting knife for under $75. Rabbits are quite tasty, and they're protected by nothing. They're nuisance animals. You can harvest them 24/7, but daylight hours, 7 days.
All right, there you go. Thanks, Brian. Thank you for that.
Yep, take care.
I hear that, and I'm like, okay, well, all right. I could see me out there with a knife and a pellet gun in my West Loop neighborhood trying to kill a little rabbit. I guarantee I would miss that rabbit and hit somebody's Mercedes.
Will the rabbit see you?
The rabbits are
with the weapon and knife and then be scared off.
Yeah, probably. And to be honest with you, they're not very, there's no predators. So they're a little bit standoffish in the way that they're like city rabbits and they're like, what are you going to do? So maybe Brian's right. Maybe I come out there with a fillet knife and do like a little, like I'm an actor, like a Robert, you know, De Niro. Kind of like, what am I going to do? Baseball. Like from the Untouchables. It's a game. And I walk around with the bat. Maybe I should send him a message. I don't know. Keep them coming. All right. It's time for the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Donald Trump was officially nominated by Republican delegates today. He's the Republican nominee for the President of the United States. Day two of the convention, Make America Great Again, turns to Make America Work Again, which sounds more like a threat than a promise. Sounds like we're being forced to build a pyramid, not bolster the economy. Get back to work! Break is over! This is the last time you'll ever have a weekend! Something like that. The Republican Party hopes to put the first day behind them after it became clear that parts of Melania Trump's speech was lifted from a Michelle Obama speech in 2008. The problem that I have with people brushing off the blatant plagiarism is that plagiarism at its core is lying. And it seems like that's the core value that the Trump campaign wants to stress. They're not establishment. They're not the lying crooks in Washington. That's Hillary. That's Bill. That's the Democrats. Yet on day one, they get caught in the same stuff. And then they double down, saying that they didn't make any mistake. They're defiant, using clever words to claim their innocence. Like I said, sounds familiar. I don't think it's that big of a deal, but I'm also not the one who's pointing out the lying, hypocritical opponent. I'm all for you running a campaign outside the establishment, but to appeal to voters by calling out the same stuff your campaign's doing? That sounds pretty, pretty, pretty politician-y, huh? Think about it. Protests continued outside the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland. At one point, protesters from the Black Lives Matters, the KKK, and the Westboro Baptist Church reportedly threw urine at one another. Now, this sounds like the beginning of a racist summer camp joke. Black Lives Matter, KKK, and the Westboro Church all get into a raft. The band Queen is mad that Donald Trump's campaign continues to use their music, including last night at the RNC. Lawyers are quick to point out that under licensing rules, they can use it for live television broadcasts. When reached for comment, the ghost of Freddie Mercury was like, no, wait, Donald Trump the businessman? Excuse me while I roll over in this grave. I have no idea what Freddie Mercury actually sounds like, but that was pretty close. Fox News chief Roger Ailes has reportedly been forced out of the network amid sexual harassment accusations from stars Gretchen Carlson and Megyn Kelly. Ailes is out, but allegedly walks out with $40 million, because that's usually what people are accused of sexual harassment walk away with, right? Seriously. Seriously? Seriously. Seriously. I have no joke here. Just seriously. Violence rocked the South Side today at 60th and Paline in West Englewood. Several shots were fired, and one of them struck a six-year-old on a porch. In broad daylight, in the middle of the day, it was reported that over 40 shells were found at the crime scene. You know what? This should preempt RNC coverage. Go live till the killer's found. But in reality, it's just going to fade away. A six-year-old. Give me a break, Chicago. In technology news, Twitter is opening up its application process to let everyone apply for a verified blue checkmark next to your name. Great. So now you can be a verified racist, sexist, xenophobic troll who has something to say about Lady Gaga's breakup. See, this is the evidence that if you work hard at being a troll. In weather, the last 5 months have been the hottest in the history of the planet. Take that, Venus. Also, the excessive heat warning is now from Thursday to Saturday locally. So wellness checks are in order. So I've got the South. Pete's got the North. Martyr's going to take the West. So that means that you at home, you've got Northwest Indiana. Cool? Good luck. If I were you, I'd start now. In sports, we're live waiting for the press conference where Jerry Reinsdorf is going to announce that the White Sox are going home for good, just forfeiting the rest of the season. What? That's not happening? It should. Think about how many games the Sox have blown this year. A whole series against the Royals. And that game last night, Chris Sale shut out through 8 innings. And David Robertson just gives it up. As of right now, the Sox are 8th in the wild card hunt. Last night was a tough one. One word, sell. The Cubs got behind Anthony Rizzo and beat up on the Mets in Game 1 of the series last night at Wrigley. Back at it tonight, Arrieta versus Syndergaard, again with the long hair. Ugh. Also, Cubs are pretty emphatic that Kyle Schwarber is untradeable before the August 1st deadline. Until, that is, he's traded. It's just the way it is in baseball. The Summer League champion Chicago Bulls are not going to do a ticker tape parade down LaSalle Street. Just clarifying. Jimmy Butler's heading to Rio for the Olympics, and a totally unsubstantiated internet rumor has the Bulls looking to trade Taj Gibson and Nikola Mirotic for the Clippers' Blake Griffin. Done. 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 I'll take anyone on the Bulls who does Kia commercials. And finally tonight, McDonald's and Starbucks say that they're going to prohibit pornography from being accessed on their public Wi-Fi. What? So what am I going to look at when I'm pretending to work? Oh, so this is what Trump means when he says, make America work again. Got it. That's the carryout for July 19, 2016. Hey, we're serving all of our food in popsicle form for the big heat wave. You want a burger popsicle? Pizza popsicle? How about an onion ring popsicle? Hey, don't knock it till you try it. I wouldn't try it. Boy, I'm crabby tonight. That was all that, all those, all the carryout. I was just being crabby. It's these rabbits. All right, well, coming up on the show, talk about how to improve transportation. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. The one thing that I can be optimistic about, Rob Martier, is that the texts are flowing in. If I have a problem with rabbits, the Download Nation is here to help, right?
I hear you.
What would you use if you had rabbits all over your new shed?
Like a Gatling gun, I suppose.
Right, exactly.
Just set it up on the tripod and just start blasting away.
From the roof, yeah. Just for effect.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if nothing else, even if I miss all of them, the sound alone would make them scatter.
I have a feeling they wouldn't care in my neighborhood. They'd be like, whatever, Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and we've got the issues of Pepe Le Pew as well. So, I mean, it's like rabbits and skunks and all kind of vermin.
Fun. Well, maybe as I do how to improve, you know, tonight people will help me improve my rabbit situation.
Yeah, but you'll be happy to know that day two of the RNC, the theme is Make America Work Again. Hmm. So we're all going to be put back to work. This is good.
That's right. That's right. Here's the news.
I mean, we have jobs.
We have jobs, but we'll get back to work. Thank you, Rob. It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's time for our monthly segment called How to Improve Blank. It's a segment that takes a look at the big tickets of our time, ticket items of our time, politics, money, technology, even specific stuff like how to improve rabbit repellent. You know, we're going to need some ideas on that. Last month, we did government efficiency. Tonight, we take on transportation. Whether it be infrastructure improvements, traffic congestion, airports, or public transportation, this issue is one that always is in need of improvement. So how do we do it? It's not just about the money, but it's about foresight, planning. Your ideas on how to improve transportation, 312-981-7200. You can text, you can call. Mary Sue Barrett, president of the Metropolitan Planning Council, is in studio with me. Welcome back to The Download. Good to see you.
Thank you, Justin.
All right, so let's talk transportation. July actually is a good month to talk about this because at the end of the session, we saw some movement when it came to resources that were going to be provided for at least infrastructure when it comes to transportation.
Well, that's partially right. Not real resources that you can grab and put in your pocket, but a tool to get more resources. So the idea is called value capture, which is just a fancy term for if you improve the infrastructure, guess what? People are going to want to build and invest and locate by that. And so that will result in higher real estate values. Can we capture a portion of that to help pay for the infrastructure on the front end? So it's kind of projecting ahead, grabbing those resources to help fund transportation.
Now, this is all because the federal government essentially said, we'll help you with infrastructure, but you got to match it.
That's right. That's always the deal and a tough deal, especially when your state doesn't have a budget. So there have been resources that have been ours for the asking for one of the major projects that listeners have undoubtedly heard about is the CTA's modernization of the Red and Purple Line along the North Lakefront. Well, that's about a $4 billion project. Mm. There are resources in Washington, but you need that match. locally, and there was no source. So this action at the end of June is very good news. It will help both that Red-Purple Line project and also Union Station, the Blue Line along the Eisenhower, and a possibility of the Red Line extension south. So four projects were called out in that piece of legislation. It still needs to jump through a couple hoops to get authorized, but it's a tool we didn't have a couple weeks ago.
Before this, and just to give a little background as we try to figure out how to improve transportation, what were the normal ways that we would fund transportation or infrastructure needs?
Well, there's still the way we need to fund it. So transportation user fees is the main concept here, both at the federal level and at the state level. So at the state level, that's been the gas tax and motor vehicle registration fees. So okay. I know people love to talk about the gas tax, but here's something that maybe you haven't thought about. It has not been raised since 1991. Name me one thing in your life that the prices stayed the same for all those years.
Wow. So that 1991, we're doing all this complaining about taxes and gas tax or gas prices going up and down.
You might see the price at the pump go up,
right?
But those dollars are not helping fix your roads. They're going to the oil companies. So it's been stuck at 19 cents. And meanwhile, more than 30 states, we've been bypassed by other states who have taken action, either already or in the next, are pending right now. And Illinois has not been one of those. So there are a number of ideas kicking around. And one of the things that the Metropolitan Planning Council has tried to contribute to this conversation is let's get our arms around what this costs. If we really wanted to catch up with roads in good shape and transit systems that worked, just the maintenance and a few key projects that there's broad agreement on, like that Red-Purple Line, what does it cost?
Right.
Drum roll, $43 billion over 10 years. So that is the number that there's at least agreement that that's what we need to shoot for.
That's the number we need to get back up to speed to be sort of at the level in which 18 other states or whatever the number of states are at in terms of infrastructure resources.
Absolutely. And if you're sick and tired of paying for that that pop tire that hit the pothole or an axle that broke, those are hundreds and hundreds of dollars of repair. And when you compare that to this 19 cents a gallon, we actually would be ahead if we actually sucked it up, invested in something that we know is going to help the economy.
Mary Sue, you know, you hear so many people complain, and they might be listening right now saying, well, you know what, it's obvious that we have the money, because if I travel on any of our expressways or even Michigan Avenue, I'm going to see orange signs up to say construction in progress, repairs being done. There's obviously this season is when we see multiple construction projects. Is that a sign that we have the money for it, that we're actually being progressive and looking forward and when it comes to planning for things like roads and repair?
No, but I understand why that's confusing. There's dollars that are raised through a variety of sources, including the federal and the local sources, and there are projects that have been in the pipeline for many years that are just now playing out. But basically, we're emptying out the bank account, and when you put things on hold, as the recent state budget until we finally figured out the temporary, which is not a good thing, but at least a temporary budget,
right.
There were a whole bunch of state road projects and bridges and so forth that were going to have to be put on hold. If you lay off crews, that's obviously real people with real jobs, also just a huge cost to restart that whole logistical process. So it's just what you want is predictability in funding your infrastructure, and it's exactly what we haven't had. So let me put out a number just to get people thinking.
Love it. Love the numbers.
If we if we wanted to catch up and get back on track, giving people choices and options of how to travel, that gas tax would need to be raised, if we just looked at the transportation user fees, by 30 cents a gallon, so from 19 to 49 cents. And
this is never going to happen.
Well, let me finish.
That's 30 cents.
And the motor vehicle registration fee increased by 50%. I know that sounds like a lot. But what you are paying today on your lost productivity, time, extra gas because you're sitting there idling in traffic is actually more than what you would pay if we invested.
But this is, again, this is part of the problem of the way that we do government in the state of Illinois, that it's very difficult to find sources of revenue because we've taxed to the max and we've had a lot of different we talked about government efficiency
last
time around. So, I mean, maybe in a perfect world, the idea of going 30 cents up on the gas tanks per gallon, plus 50% up.
Let me translate that, right? Because it sounds like a lot on a gallon basis. It ends up being about $150 a year.
Okay.
So if you have that car repair and it costs you $500, but this, which is, you know, $12 a month or so, is the alternative, and what you get is getting to your destination on time, a transit system that's more pleasant and reliable, all of those things that add to keep dollars in your pocket. And so I think it's almost like flipping the way we think about this. I don't want to pay that.
Right.
Point out to people that, well, you are paying for it and you're not getting anything.
Mary Sue Barrett's the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. Quick question, everybody. 312-981-7200. Just text it in. Would you pay 30 cents more per gallon if it were a gas tax that went to infrastructure to fix the roads and other issues when it comes to Chicago area transportation?
Here's one thing that I think people will help with the confidence building. I realize confidence is very shaky. At the November ballot, there's going to be a question, a referendum question, about whether any new dollars raised should be put in a lockbox. Mm-hmm. I'm going on a limb here. I predict that that's going to get a lot of support and it will pass easily because that's what people are fearful of. If we raise it, if we find the backbone to do this, then
we'll spend it somewhere
else. It'll get swept and diverted. So this is about fixing
that. Here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. And I want to talk about the other issues too, traffic congestion and then also public transportation because we've got about 10 minutes left. We'll take a real quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation, how to improve transportation with Mary Sue Barrett. Stay with us. It's a download here. We're talking how to improve transportation, 312-981-7200. All right, let's talk about traffic congestion. There's some people on the line. We'll get to some revenue questions coming up here. Traffic congestion is obviously something that has always had a problem here in the Chicago area, going both ways now. The reverse commute is no longer a thing. It is essentially jam-packed. If you are a commuter, one way or the other, coming in on any of the expressways to downtown or even to the suburbs, you're seeing a long wait. Is there any way to avoid that? I feel like that is something that politicians have tried by widening roads, and nothing seems to make a dent. What can we do about traffic congestion in this area?
It is definitely not one easy answer. In the Chicago region, what we've seen is an explosion of different patterns of living and working. There's still twice as many jobs in the suburbs as there are in the city.
Yeah.
And yet only 1% of the suburban commuters are able to use transit. So overall, it's 8% of the total regional population that use transit on a regular basis to get to work. But when you think about the central area, the loop, it's 2/3. So when you have a really workable transit system with reliability and frequency and, you know, where people can feel safe, not always get a seat, but it works, people will take it. And so what we need to look at is not just the transportation fix, but right, the how we grow. So if there's more incentives, think about all of the senior citizens, all of the single person households, all of the young people. We're generally not building
right,
the kind of homes, condos and apartments by transit that people want. There's not everyone, but there's a lot of folks that don't want to use a car, and that's not just a city phenomenon. So I suggest the solution to our traffic problem is in part building different communities.
Oh, really? So finding a way to build different communities that are going to be more progressive and integrated with transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we just don't have that. A lot of communities are like, well, there's a train, it's on the outskirts of town, mm-hmm, or there's one train, there's not enough seats. You're talking about can we almost expand our communities
and think about
planning.
Yeah. It's good for the people who only can drive because it's fewer people competing for road space. It's also good for your pocketbook. It costs $10,000 or more dollars a year to own a car, just the costs of operating with insurance and all that. So when you think about stabilizing people's personal financial situation and building wealth, giving people an option to live in a transit-friendly community, we actually are losing population in the city of Chicago around our transit system, which is crazy.
All right, so we heard it here first. Or Orland Park, you're going to have to move. You're just out. We're taking you to a whole different town. We're making a whole new town for Orland.
Not necessarily. Orland has great transit. We need to take advantage of the transit that serves our suburbs.
Okay, so I mean, is there? That's a great way to put it, because for me, you know, we talked a lot about the numbers and what it would take in the current system for us to really think about how to improve. Is Chicago and the surrounding area really in a position where they can start from scratch? I mean, once you start, I mean, I always see this, like, we're expanding the red line. We're gonna, you know, expand the metro line. These are old lines. Is there any way to say, okay, you know what? Let's put our head together for 20 years here and completely strip it out and put new transit in for the next 100 to 200 years.
It sounds pretty appealing, but it's very hard to wipe that slate clean. A transit, new subway line in an already developed area is just mind-blowingly expensive. So you do occasionally hear about those proposals, but more often when you look at other cities, the lesson to take is to experiment. So in Chicago, we have this new Loop Link, which just opened this winter. It's still an experimental, you know, working out the kinks phase. But
I have to say, as a rider, as a driver and a bus rider on the number 20 bus that comes in, when I'm on Madison, the traffic is a little bit easier.
That's
when
idea.
You're driving, and when the buses are able to fly right through there, so there actually seems to be some anecdotal improvement in that system.
Well, and a lot of folks are surprised to hear how many people that are traveling up and down Ashland Avenue or Lakeshore Drive are in buses. It's a huge percentage, sometimes 50%. So when you get into that debate about, boy, can we afford to take a lane of traffic, as was true with Washington and Madison for the bus rapid transit called Loop Link, or as proposed along Ashland, again, people get a little agitated. But if it means that all of the traffic moves easier, and that for some people, like think of the 75,000 people that go to the Illinois Medical District every day,
right
off Ashland, if they had a more convenient transit option, everything would work better.
So it's about finding an area that we know is overpopulated or at least being traveled well, and finding transportation options for that area.
Yes, and this idea of a rapid bus can work in a suburb-to-suburb setting where the cost of a train is just not going to happen.
All right, let's go rapid fire, because I got a lot of texts here. Okay, so we're going to go right through this. 847 says, yes, I would do a gas tax. 773 says, ask Shell, BP, and Exxon for all their windfall profits. 312 says, no. So why does Indiana have a balanced budget and they are flourishing? I don't know if that is one-to-one, but something to think about. 312 says, no gas tax. The proposal is geographically prejudiced and does not benefit the rest of the state outside of the major metro regions.
Well, one of the things we have to remember as a state is that the economic engine that pays for everything starts here in this region. It's 80% of the tax revenues, the jobs, the economic punch comes for this region. So we have to invest in the infrastructure. Otherwise, we can't afford to support good things happening in communities everywhere. So that's not about starving downstate. It's about being fair.
630 says, why don't we pay for the roads by taking the politicians' pensions? That's probably not going to happen. 630 says they want 50 more for every plate sticker. It doubled a few years ago. And drugs have stayed the same price for 30 years. I don't know what kind of drugs they're talking about, but okay.
And our memories sometimes are short. The last time the motor vehicle registration fee was raised was 1999. So again, for the price of your Netflix subscription every month, you can have good transportation.
312 says, no to the gas tax. Major regions absorb a higher cost of living adjustment through increased wages. The tax should only be imposed through tolls and fare rate hikes for mass transit. Wow. That was articulate.
Yeah. And actually, that person's on to a discussion to watch, which is that maybe more and more of our roads everywhere are going to be toll roads in the future.
Yeah, right.
Pay as you go.
There you go. Pay as you go. 312, Keith says, O'Hare Express trains, upgrade Blue Line to include high-level monorail, connect O'Hare Metro platform, electrify all Metra. There's a lot going on there.
A lot of great ideas. And I think if we invite people into the conversation about if we had more resources, what would we want to fix, we'd get lots of great ideas about connecting growth and infrastructure.
Well, it just means we got to do it again because we're out of time. Mary Sue Barrett is the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. This is our monthly segment we do together on how to improve. We'll do a different topic next week. But I think that that's the point. We'll come back. People are geared up because I think transportation is one of those issues that obviously we can talk about it all night. So, Mary Sue, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Good segment there, how to improve transportation. I love how I'm like, we'll just do that one in, from 735 to 8. We'll get it all done. We'll wrap it up. Problem solved. Next time we do that topic specifically, we should open it up and do the 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock hour, try to do a whole hour, because the amount of people that have responded on text, I mean, it's there's 30, 35 texts. There's people on the line. People really care about transportation, transportation issues. And I think it's a great idea to ask the question. We're not politicians. We're citizens just like you. Would you accept a tax that you know exactly what that money was being used for? Because that's always the issue with taxes. You're like, oh, we're raising a property tax for schools, sort of. And you're like, wait, you still need money? So that's a good thing. And I for one, feel like that might be a smart move to raise a gas tax if it specifically went to infrastructure projects in the state of Illinois.
But then how do you hold them accountable? That's the thing, because they can change midstream.
Yeah, we said it was going
toward that, but we need money over here.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Right.
That's the next step. I would say electroshock therapy. Some sort. That's like if you take that money out and it goes anywhere else, you get a shock. we still got to work that part out, right? We'll be covering the Republican National Convention tonight, 10 o'clock, with analysis and reaction to tonight's speakers, Make America Work Again. The topic of the convention day two is the economy. We'll have Charles Lipson, Chris Roebling, Congressman Holmgren, who's part of the Illinois delegation, who's there. We'll talk about their vote today. Also talk with Paris Schutz, who will join us from Chicago tonight. So lots to talk about day two of the RNC that's coming up at 10 o'clock. Well, Abraham Leviton joins me now. He's the man behind Nerds on Tour, the podcast that talks to musicians about the music industry. Tonight we start our monthly, or just start, we start, this is really our third. I don't know why I say start.
This is the lucky one, number three.
Lucky number three. This is our monthly segment about different issues for both artists and consumers when it comes to the music industry. Abraham's a Chicago musician, fronted the band Baby Teeth. He also did Shame That Tune at the Hideout, and his company Piano Power. It's all about providing in-house lessons from real artists who teach the students what they want to play. Abraham, good to see you.
Great to see you, Justin. We're doing it.
It was a little early tonight, too, 8 o'clock. All right, so let's talk about this. The big issue in music right now has to be, surprisingly, licensing. As we saw the band Queen, Brian May goes to Twitter and said, I told you once, stop using our music. You see bands over and over and over on both sides of the aisle, essentially telling politicians on the campaign trail and at conventions, stop using our stuff. Do they have a point? Or do they have a legal leg to stand on?
It turns out that their point is only an aesthetic point. And you leave it to Trump to throw out the playbook and to really explore the truth behind the issue. This has been going on for years. And the Republicans are always the ones who get busted for this. They pick a classic rock song, whether it's Reagan using Born in the USA,
right.
Whether it's George W. Bush using I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty. And then the classic rocker always starts beating their chest and saying, that is my work. Stand down, Republican.
It's not for you.
Right. And then they back down and it's over. Aha. Until Trump, who was the first to say, I won't back down. In the words of Mr. Petty.
It was Queen, not Tom Petty, but go ahead.
I am a champion, in the words of Queen. And he just said...
Well, if people came out today and said, you know what, actually, legally, we license everything through the idea of broadcast, live broadcast on television. So it doesn't matter if Queen protests. It doesn't matter if Sony Music protests. They have a legitimate legal right to use the music.
Yeah, and I was such a simpleton. I always thought that if the classic rocker waved their arms and said, stop, 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 that the politician would have to stop. And it took Trump to say, I will show you the law. I am the law.
I am the law. It was Law and Order night, right? So
was it?
It kind of worked out for him. But this is, I mean, this is something that politics and music, especially when it comes to using music for promotional purposes, they've been, like you said, I mean, they've been at odds. And we've seen the weirdest songs being used. We saw Don't Stop Thinking About Tonight. We saw Fleetwood Mac for Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
Obama kind of took a safe route with Stevie Wonder. I think he'd signed, sealed, and delivered.
Right.
But, you know, all eyes now kind of shift to what Trump's song's going to be when he walks off the stage at the RNC on Thursday. Because, you know, I think it'd be something else if he comes out and says, if he comes out with We Are the Champions or something by Queen again after they have publicly said don't use it.
It's got to be. It's got to be We Are the Champions again, because that is so Trump. I mean, Trump essentially, his slogan is not Make America Great Again. It's Screw You. And anytime anybody has challenged him on anything, he doubles down.
Yeah,
he is the double down master.
So is this something that, I mean, at first glance, I'm like, okay, well, I thought it was possible that Sony Music or Warner Brothers Music, whoever owned it, licensed it out. Now that this is out there and more artists and politicians know that there's really that nothing that can be done, what are we going to see a bunch of music being that not being a concern anymore and musicians standing down, or are they going to flare up even more and protest the fact their music's being used?
Well, I mean, there's only one party to watch with this stuff, right? It's Republicans. I mean, Democrats
do it, but they never get called on it. Right?
They never get called on it because by and large, artists are left leaning and they're flattered. And, you know, oh, of course Obama can use my song. Of course Clinton can use my song. But the Republican pool of rockers is basically like Ted Nugent and Meatloaf.
Sammy Hagar.
Right.
There's a lot in there. Oh. I mean, that's a good 20, 25 songs you can use.
I'm not sure if that would be a full Spotify playlist.
I can't drive 55 over and over and over. It could work. So that's one issue that's playing out right now. And it is interesting because music plays a big role when it comes to these protests that are outside the conventions, both the Republican and the Democrat. We know the Prophets of Rage, Tom Morello and Cypress Hill and those kind of bands are playing. We've seen bands play big shows. There really is almost a market for the music when it comes to conventions.
Yeah, again, I mean, if you're on the right side, or the left side, I should say, because Democrats seem to have this unlimited pool of, oh, this is an anti-Republican rally? We're going to get top-of-the-line talent to play this. And as soon as you cross over to the Republican side, it's like tumbleweeds.
It really is. Abraham Levitan in studio. Okay, he's the man behind Nerds on Tour. We'll take a break. We'll continue our conversation tonight. We got some stuff to talk about. We want to talk about festivals. Pitchfork, obviously, just wrapped up here in Chicago. Lollapalooza on its way in just under 2 weeks here. They're coming next weekend. And the question that's on the table and the one that we want to throw out to the listener is, do you enjoy going to these festivals? I mean, on paper, it's great. You see 150 bands and they're your favorite bands. But when you're there and you're actually a part of it, do you enjoy the experience?
Does it ever live up to the expectations that you had when you plunked down those three bills for that 3-day pass?
312-981-7200. You could text or call and be a part of the conversation tonight here on The Download. Stay with us. Ladies and gentlemen! Mr. Paul Ryan! Yeah! We're talking music, licensing, the industry here. 312-981-7200. My guest in studio for our monthly segment, Nerds on Tour, Abraham Levitan. He is the man behind Nerds on Tour, the podcast that interviews musicians about the music industry, the business behind the music. He's also a longtime musician here in Chicago, as well as the man behind Piano Power. All right, let's talk about our question that we posed to the audience and the impetus for it. Pitchfork came through town for all accounts, successful. Although I was surprised to see that they didn't have sellouts on a couple of the nights.
That's a big change.
That's a big change. Usually it's packed. And maybe that has something to do with the fact that it's always packed and it's hard to maneuver a festival in a Chicago park. But, you know, you sort of, your eyes are bigger than your ears. And sometimes when you deal with these festivals, Pitchfork, Lollapalooza, Riot Fest, you see all these bands coming together and you're like, oh my God, I gotta go see these shows.
Of course. Like I went on Friday night, and I can recall that moment where you're sitting in front of your computer and the lineup goes up and there are like four or five artists on that night that you're really excited to see. And then you plunk down the money. Now, what happens, as I knock over my water bottle, what happens between that moment and the moment when you are at the show and suddenly you have the energy to see maybe one of those artists? Then you have to pee. Then you get really hungry. Then you'd rather hang out with your friends. And then you might check out 5 minutes of somebody else.
Isn't that essentially the business model of a festival where they're like, well, we got the value end. You paid in and we got the value end. Now, Pete, you went to Pitchfork as well. And, I mean, you kind of bailed on the last shows on that Sunday sort of for the same reason, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm losing my excitement for festivals in general as I become older. And it's more, I just want to, you know, on Saturday, we're going to go, and I see pictures of people posting, like, you know, who they're seeing. And then I think, oh, my God, I'm missing out. I got to go the next day.
Right.
And then the next day, I'm like, what are we doing?
I do think there's something to that, Pete, is just the idea that we are perhaps aging out. But I still remember that from my 20s, too, the idea that your eyes are bigger than your stomach. And by the time you get to the festival, you're literally seeing one band. And then the rest of it is social, gastronomic, and
standing in line for the porta potty.
Standing in line for the porta potty.
312-981-7200. I'd love to hear a contrarian to that point. I mean, do you enjoy festivals? Do you have a great time? Have you had, you know, tremendous sort of experiences at a Pitchfork, at a Lollapalooza? Life-changing kind of stuff. I remember being at Lollapalooza years ago, about 10 years ago, and feeling the same way, where I was just like, I mean, there's something magical about being in Grant Park and being able to look up at the skyline around you while your favorite artist is on stage. There's nothing, and then everything else is sort of like every moment, mm-hmm. every waking moment from that point on, I'm like, how do I get out of here?
Yeah.
Essentially, like, where's the door? What's the easiest way out of here? Is that gate open? Good, because there's going to be a ton of people. How am I going to get? Am I going to get on the L? What am I going to do?
Yeah.
How am I going to get out of downtown? There's a lot of anxiety, but that just might be me.
Yes.
But that's sort of how I sort of figure all the festivals.
Other questions might include, what's that smell? And what's going on in my stomach?
But, I mean, do you really feel? I mean, it'd be quite possible that we're just not the right demographic. We're three, you know, mature gentlemen in studio right now complaining about something that is really geared towards 19-year-olds.
That's what the listeners have to tell us, Justin. I do hope they call in. I hope we have some authentic millennials that call in and just say, shut up, you old fogies. We had so much fun at Pitchfork, and we saw five bands in a row, and there was no fatigue whatsoever.
Are you the kind of guy who goes to a festival and says, all right, I almost like a tourist where you have six, you know, I'm going to do this at 1:30, we're going to go here, and 2:15, I'm going to be here, and I'm getting my fanny pack out?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm extremely type A. I would definitely have the fanny pack, at least the metaphorical fanny pack.
Sure.
And the app and whatever. And, yeah, of course I have my plan. But you get there, and you realize if you're there with your wife, if you want to stay married, the plan has to go out the window very quickly.
Because after 5 minutes of watching the band, the plan changes.
The plan changes, yes. And I'm terrible with change. I don't like hope or change, just to take it back to the political aspect.
Sure, of course.
But yeah, you must embrace deviating from your plan right away. And if your plan was to maximize the value of your ticket, that's a very difficult thing to do.
I will relate it to an experience that's probably more relatable for the people in our studio and maybe the people that are listening. When you plan a trip to a Disney property, when you go to Disneyland or Disney World, I'm the kind of dad who spent the night before in the Magic Kingdom hotel You know, sun goes to sleep, and you're like, okay, so we can start over here at Finding Nemo's submarine. Mm. And what if I did a little jog down real quick, right through Tomorrowland to Frontierland, get Frontierland out of the way, pop, 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 then get ourselves a fast pass and get ourselves in line for Space Mountain.
No, the more I think about it, that comparison is super accurate because every time you go to Six Flags, what happens? You wait in one line for one marquee ride that lasts for 90 seconds.
Right.
And then you're eating elephant ears for 5 hours.
You're at a knockoff Johnny Rockets going, really? It doesn't taste like Johnny Rockets, but I guess it was moderately.
The brand is here,
so I might as well. But yeah, I agree. I feel like I feel festivals are similar to that experience because when I do go to Great America or I'm Six Flags or, you know, I feel like the plan goes out the window as well because there are forces in front of you that just are immovable, and that is that two-hour line for the Superman ride.
You're talking about large humans.
And large humans.
I think there's also an issue with I don't like to necessarily be up close any longer. I don't feel the need to be close to an artist.
Right.
I can sit back. But then when you're sitting back, especially at a festival, then you have people that aren't paying attention, and that bugs me. But then,
oh, you're so right. Someone who puts the blanket down and does the, you know, like, I'm going to chill. This is a chill area. We have designated this to be the chill area of Pitchfork. And you're like, no, I'm going to stand by. You pick this. Get up.
At Sunday, I noticed, and maybe they were there all weekend, the people that had the inflatable furniture, like a sectional of inflatable furniture.
That's just a bit gone bad. You know what I mean? 312-981-7200 if you got experiences about.
It is funny, though. I mean, you see these enormous speakers that presumably are very powerful. But if you are not towards the front of the stage, this jag-off talking next to you is louder than those speakers. Right. How does that happen?
Where you want to go? Hey, man, come on. I told this story in the last week. I went with my wife to see Chance the Rapper last year, and we just went for that show, right? Right at the end. And I was like, I was kind of like, you know, wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and ready, and I was just like, I can't believe how tight this is, how dangerous this is. There's so many bodies pressed against each other. What is this? And I felt like it. And then at that time, I saw a friend of mine's daughter kind of squeeze through, and my wife, she's like, oh, she was about to say something. I go, no, she don't want to see you. Like, the last person she wants to see right now is you going, hi, oh my gosh, Michelle.
Right.
It's Mrs. Kaufman. I know. All right, let's try Tim. Tim, tell me about your festival experience. Do you go to festivals?
Well, I've been to a few over the years. It's been a while. I think the last big show I probably was at was Crossroads a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But my kids keep bugging me like, Dad, you got to come with us to a festival. You got to. And I mean, they're 54, they're like 21, and they went to Bonnaroo and ended up coming home early because they couldn't deal with it anymore.
Oh, interesting. So even the kids are kind of, maybe it's not just the, you know, the old timers, but the kids are also getting fed up with the experience. And those are experiences, thanks, Tim. Those are experiences when you're talking about Bonnaroo where you got to camp.
Well,
I'm not
camping
anywhere when it comes to music.
Let's take it to the logical extreme. Woodstock.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you actually start interviewing people who were there, there were maybe one-third who actually had a transcendent experience.
Maybe less.
And
one-fifth.
One-fifth.
The rest are like, did we see a pancake place on the way in?
I mean, you know, when you really read the nitty-gritty details of Woodstock and what the weather was like and how much mud there was, and I mean...
Yeah, it probably wasn't a great experience. Hey, if any of our listeners, 312-981-7200. All right, Abraham Levitan in studio. We're doing Nerds on Tour, our monthly look at the issues behind music and the music industry. We'll take a break for the news. We'll come back. We'll continue. We got some other stuff to talk about, including independent record stores. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, playing the worst. 312-981-7200. This is our segment we do every week where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. It's great. I mean, it really is great. A couple of comics, Nelson and Mars, are in studio tonight.
They say that positivity is what ultimately rewards you in life, but this seems to work against that theory.
Well, it works for it, the positivity that comes out of it, the community aspect of all of us communally complaining about the thing, like someone keeping their left turn signal on.
Yeah. So you're building a nation.
I'm building a nation of positivity through negativity. It's spiritual. I don't expect you to understand it.
Over my head.
Over your Abraham Levitan in studio, talking about issues in the music industry. Selena, you actually love festivals.
I do love festivals, and I can't get enough of them. But and I'm not the right demographic either. But I think, you know, an interesting way to look at it, I mean, when you're not at a set that you were just like dying to see, you can take the cultural anthropologist view of the festival,
right.
You know, or the sociologist. And then, you know, there's the frat boy section vomiting. And, you know, well, that's an interesting observation. And you can just be grateful that you're not at that stage of your life.
Right. You can be the Jane Goodall of festivals.
Exactly, right. Yeah.
Selena, sure. You sound like you're way more laid back than either Justin or me, and it sounds like you can like go to a plan B a lot faster than we can. Like, oh, well, it's not about the music, it's about the anthropology.
Well, it took a few years of, I mean, being a festival veteran, because I was totally like you, like how you were discussing with the Disney experience. And on like Lollapalooza, you have your app and you can pick your schedule and it'll even send you alerts like, oh, you know, better hurry up and get to this stage. But I think part of it is the festivals, it's different. From going to the clubs in Chicago during the year, where like you're going to see a particular band that you want, and that's it. The festival is to discover music. So I totally changed my, you know, how I look at it. I mean, I might have acts that I'm looking forward to seeing, but if you like from a smaller stage, you hear something that sounds intriguing, you know, or you don't want to, you know, traipse all the way to the other side of Grant Park in the rain.
Yeah, right.
That is the biggest bummer, I would have to say. It always has to rain at least one day.
Right.
And like major rain. Like they might have to, you know, clear you out and put you in a garage.
Summer festivals, you know? Right? All right. Well, thanks, Selena. Yeah. Appreciate that. All right. So she's more like the Rick Steves.
She is. Now, Rick Steves, that guy's laid back too, isn't
he? Right.
Now, I mean, but yeah, I mean, Selena, I was teasing her for her laid back nature, but I do think there is something to that idea of like,
to it, yeah.
There's the club show experience, which is so intense. And somebody like me just wants to have that club show experience five times in a row, or else it feels underwhelming. But then you have Selena saying, discover and be an anthropologist. And maybe that's how you survive as a long-term festival goer.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because festivals are changing almost the concert experience, and you're seeing more and more in the summertime. That's how everybody performs. And again, you know, as we've talked about how touring has become the way that artists are making money, mostly off of merch and the ability to make money directly from their fans. Do festivals, when you're touring with 100 bands or in one spot with 75 bands, do they go again? Does that hurt the band's bottom line? And how does it almost becomes more support, like almost like with streaming, where you're supporting music as opposed to the one-to-one transaction?
Yeah, man, I could answer that question five different ways. But to your point, it does go against a one-to-one transaction with an artist. That to me is still the most natural way to hear music, is that one-to-one transaction where everybody in the room is here because we are Milli Vanilli fans and we are united to see Milli Vanilli only. I'm assuming that they're still touring, which...
Oh, they are, sure.
I'm sure they are.
Sure.
And that experience, a room full of people that really want to see the same band, you're not going to have everybody around you checking their phone and talking, like Pete was saying, was happening at Pitchfork. I mean, that situation exists because you might be surrounded by people for whom seeing this particular band that means the world to you is their plan B or plan C. So I do think it relates to streaming in the sense of it's very casual. You are not having to...
That's what I was going to say. I guess my point being that, you know, the streaming... You know, and we hear about artists being able to give away stuff for free, mixtapes, and even in streaming situations where they're like, hey, we'll just give our product away because the music's free because we're going to make our money on the tour. Mm. Is it almost a festival circuit? Obviously, the organizers are making money, but is it almost continue that trend where you're almost like, this is a show for free, so maybe you'll take a listen to our stream and then we'll come back? And
no, I do think there's an important difference, which is that for some bands, it's the biggest payday they're going to get all
right,
year.
Right.
You know, I was talking a couple months ago with Bonnie Prince Billy on Nerds on Tour, the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, Google Nerds on Tour. About this very point where he was saying, I hate playing festivals. The only reason I'll say yes is if the paycheck is so big that I would feel awful for my bandmates if I turned it down.
So what do you, I mean, I don't know if you know the specifics, but what is a major Lollapalooza act getting to play at Grant Park? $100,000, $150,000?
I think you're in the ballpark.
Somewhere, again,
I don't really know, but I do think there are indie festivals like Pitchfork, they would pay headliners, I mean, somebody's going to correct me on this for sure, but well over $20,000, $25,000.
So that's not bad if you're a headliner.
Yeah.
But if you're one of the bands that are starting out and this is your first Pitchfork and you're playing at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, that you're not getting $20,000.
I'm sure you'll get used and abused. I mean, to put it in a super small scale terms, my band, when I first moved to Chicago, our dream was to play the Metro. Right? I mean, that was like the ultimate for a local band was to play the Metro. And it finally happened just before we broke up, of course, just we're hitting our peak.
Yeah, right. That was it.
And it was like a Wednesday night, four local bands, and everybody got, I think, either 50 or 100 bucks. So it was like, welcome to Chicago, kid. You did it.
You made it. You made it.
So yeah, I'm sure that stuff happens with Pitchfork. I mean, to Pitchfork's credit, they have a budget. They have to get the biggest bang for their buck.
It's not on them. I'm just saying the bands have to look at festivals in a different way since they're not getting paid.
I don't think it follows the streaming analogy that closely because I think there are plenty of bands that get paid majorly compared to what they make in a club show. I mean, when I was playing with Bobby Kahn back in the mid-2000s, legendary Chicago avant-garde artist, WGN audience, we got paid enough to fly to Oslo, Norway, play one show, and fly back home. And this was a band of seven people.
Wow.
So, and this was for Bobby Kahn, who was not raking it in across the country. So yeah, I do think festivals have
can make it happen for
serious artists. Paydays for artists, too.
Abraham Levitan, he's the man behind Nerds on Tour. You can find that podcast on iTunes, and also you can Google it, like you said. We'll continue our conversation here about the music and music industry, because we need to talk about record stores and the big news that came out of a major label essentially cutting off small record stores from their product and what impact that's going to have on the short-term lifespan of some independent record stores, even in Chicago. Abraham in studio. Stay with us. This is Download here on 720 WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Abraham Levitan. We do this once a month. We talk about issues in music and the music industry. He's the man behind Nerds on Tour, the podcast where he interviews musicians about the business of music. You can find that on Google, iTunes, all the places that podcasts live. Okay, Abraham, so let's talk about this story that came out. It was kind of a small story. Not a lot of people looked at it, but it really has a significant impact on the way that record stores do their business.
Yes. So what just came down the pike, Warner Music, which I guess had this deal in place for years but was never actually enforcing it, has decided to enforce the idea that in order for a record store to continue to do business with Warner Music, which controls many, many major labels, that store needs to put in orders that total at least $10,000 a year.
So they need to essentially order 10,000 pieces of Warner Music
$10,000 worth of Warner product
per year. And a lot of record stores, they just don't work at that volume.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't, I think in the past, you just could kind of plug along and continue to relate to them. Now you get cut off completely, which essentially means that if somebody goes in for, you know, a Father's Day gift and wants this particular major label artist, you will not be able to depend on the mom and pop shop to do that. And if you weren't doing it already, you would just default to making that purchase on Amazon instead.
Warner doesn't really care. They don't have a firm investment into independent record stores. They've done this throughout their career. Before it was Amazon, it was big box stores like Best Buy or Tower Records. They didn't have much to do with independent record stores to begin with.
Mm-hmm. And it all smacks to me of this kind of like 80-20 corporate philosophy of the idea of like, well, if something's too much work, then just cut that sector out of your business entirely. And that it just seems like there was some senior vice president that got replaced by a different senior vice president. And they were saying, you know what? We could really push our margins a little higher if we cut out all these little stores that are so much work.
So, you know, obviously this is something that could be mirrored or, replicated by other major labels to do the same kind of thing, where they want to have margins, or they want to have sort of prereqs for what it takes to be in business with Warner or Sony or something like that. Is it something that you know should be a harbinger for the end of the relationship between the music industry and independent record stores?
I don't know. I mean, to me, there's like the tipping point in the consumer's mind, right? Where like a consumer is not going to sit there and be like, okay, now I want to get this new Springsteen album. Okay, Springsteen is on Columbia Records. Now, which conglomerate is that associated with? Now, were they the ones that had the relationship severed with my local mom and pop? No, that's a ridiculous thing to expect from a consumer. So at a certain point, if enough of these things happen, the consumer will simply say, I cannot get big name artists at my mom and pop shop anymore. And the minute that happens, you really are going to have record stores that are making all their money by selling, you know, a few consignment copies of a local band. And that is not a business plan, because I feel like the big record store cash cows are always like box sets.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Someone's coming in and dropping more than $12.
Yeah. But those big holiday purchases where it's like, okay, I'm going to go in December and satisfy everybody on my shopping list and spend $700. How are you going to do that by buying only indie artists when you're talking about your dad, your uncle, and your grandpa?
Right. And that's always the way independent record stores have worked. They've always been able to give you the product that is more mainstream and be able to support some of the independent artists and the stuff that you don't usually find in stores. That's really the eclectic part of product.
For sure. Yeah, you go in for the Springsteen album, which may or may not be a gift. I'm just putting this out there. But you stay for the recommendations from the record store employee. You stay for maybe hearing something on the turntable that you hadn't heard before. And so it's that kind of like spontaneous combustion that wouldn't happen if you knew you couldn't go to that store to get a Springsteen record.
Are we at the point, though, in 2016 that people who are going to specialized independent record stores like Reckless or other stores in Dusty Groove, any of the stores, they know they're not going for the Springsteen record, right? They're already past that point. I feel like that ship has sailed. They're going in there for specific bands that they follow or to support that culture or to support that independent business.
I think that's true, but I also think that's a real bummer for Reckless Records and other stores like Reckless Records, because I think the profit margin just goes way down. I mean, not that it was ever great to begin with, the margin goes way down when you are living and dying off of indie purchases only.
Right. So is there a possibility, though, as you know, the Warner Music catalogs will be replaced? Is there a possibility that
they'll be replaced with used VHS tapes, by the way, just to make
exactly
that clear.
Exactly right. But is there a way for another market to kind of bubble up? Does the independent record store need major labels anymore? Could they find other ways? Could a third party kind of business come in that would get them the Warner Brothers stuff? I mean, are there options here for record stores to, I guess, develop into something different?
Well, I mean, let's look at it from a pure economic model, right? Because this is what's really going to captivate our audience. If we do involve a middleman, let's say,
right.
who's going to say, okay, mom and pop shop.
Come out to my truck.
Out to my truck, because I do way more than $10,000 worth of business with Warner, because I drive around every independent store in the country and sell this stuff out of my truck.
Sure.
Then the only real impact is, okay, we're working with a middleman who's charging us $3 per record, so we just bump up the price $3 per record on everything we sell. I think that's reasonable. I think you might have consumers that don't notice that. So that's kind of the unsexy end to this story, is that it's just
the hard part is, well, I mean, the hard part too about those businesses is they become nostalgia trips, and that's not necessarily great for bottom line. And secondly, if the newer kind of generations of musicians, the independent musicians we've talked about in this segment, that are doing things on their own without record labels, they're not pressing anything. They're streaming. They're putting MP3s out. So the record company, or the record store can't even go to them and be like, hey, let's just have a relationship where you give us the LPs or you give us the CDs, because they're not even, they've bypassed it entirely.
Yeah. I mean, let's cut to the chase. Owning a small record store is an extremely hard business. Brutal. The battles that musicians are fighting right now are, don't stream me, download me. Like, that is the new frontier. Right. Like, the frontier keeps getting smaller and smaller.
So where do they go? I mean, is there a possibility that they become the flag wavers for an independent culture? Is there a possibility that the record store does something that makes them more of center of a community as opposed to sell product?
I hope so. I mean, I think events like Record Store Day, I'm not sure how much of the audience is familiar with that already, but I think it's every spring. There's a day nationwide where every independent record store is having special promos and limited edition releases and all this stuff, and that gets foot traffic in. I mean, yeah, I think the dream with all of that stuff is to become a center of the community. And I mean, my immediate family, my wife and two-year-old, we went to Nashville a few months ago, and you see what Jack White is doing with Third Man Records. And that's not really a record store. That's more of a museum that sells stuff, you know, and it's like curiosity shop, and you can like or dislike Jack White's aesthetic. But he's clearly thinking of this as a record store with quotes around it, more of a museum of culture.
Right.
With things that are for sale.
Which, where some of these businesses may have to go, and they are. I mean, I think of Dusty Groove and some of the other record stores, that they're not in the game of selling the new Bruce Springsteen record. They're in the game of really catering to someone who wants to come in and find that LP from 1974. Or, you know, like, essentially, when I just walked in, I can't remember what's the name of the record store that's on Milwaukee and Wicker Park that's just next to the Dave Eggers shop, the Spy Shop. Anyway, it's right there.
I don't leave my house anymore except to come see you. So.
It's all LPs. But the point being that's their thing. It's T-shirts and posters and LPs. And you go, you start flipping through and you're like, this is amazing stuff. This is almost like found sound type stuff. It's really interesting and I like it. But I didn't think, oh, man, I need to find the new, I hope they got the new Pearl Jam. You know, that wasn't a thought that got in my head.
Right. And not to get too Californian on you, but a lot of it has to do with, do you create an environment that welcomes consumers to have this sense of discovery and exploration when you walk in, or is it a place that puts the consumer in that transactional frame of mind? I think Dusty Groove is a great example of a store that just has that magic sparkle to it. And you walk in there and you feel like, why don't I have more records? Why am I not discovering all these obscure releases from 1974? What's wrong with me? My life has to change today. And you can have that beautiful experience there. And I do think that is the future of independent record stores, is to pay attention to aesthetics and the way that it makes people feel to be in that space.
Well, they're going to have to without the relationships with major music, I guess, if they're going to cut them off or not spending enough money.
For sure.
That sounds very mob-like.
It does.
Doesn't it? It's like you didn't pay enough money this month.
It does.
Well, then you're not going to get a product.
And surely the record industry has never had any relationship with the mob.
That's a different segment here on the Nerds on Tour. All right, so this week we were able to cover a couple of things, which is good. We talked about licensing for Donald Trump and the RNC. Interesting little fight. We talked about festivals, why we go, and if it's worth it anymore. We talked about if it's worth it for the artists to be on stage, and then we wrapped up with independent record stores and whether or not they need to change the way they do business based on the way that the music industry is kind of pushing them out. Make sense?
I think we did so well, Justin. I am hiring 2 to 3 more instructors for Piano Power.
Okay.
If you are a young college grad who is just moving to Chicago to start a music career, why don't you Google Piano Power? You know how to use the internet. You're a millennial. I want to hear from you tonight.
Abraham Levitan is the man behind Nerds on Tour, the podcast that talks to musicians about the music industry. He's also the man behind his company, Piano Power. Abraham, good to talk to you. See you next month.
Thanks, Justin.
All right, it's Tuesday night, so that means it's time for The Worst. This, of course, the regular weekly segment where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. 312-981-7200. You know it's working because there's already people on the line who want to complain about the worst things, and we have some great comedians in studio tonight. Nelson Velasquez, he is a comedian. He is playing. Nelson, good to see you. Thanks for being here. First-timer.
Thanks for having me.
I like that. You're playing with Makeshift Up at Crown Point Community Theater in Indiana this Saturday, July 23rd, and with Salsation Theater Company, a longtime sketch group here in Chicago, at Second City's Beat Lounge on August 14th. And he is paired up with a prime-timer, Mars Timms. Mars Timms in studio tonight. Good to see you.
What's up, Jess? Long time no see.
I know, right? He's back for his regular appearance here on The Worst. Mars Timms, one of the men behind Pimprov, which you can see on Friday nights, 10:30. Where's Pimprov these days?
CIC Theater, 1422 West Irving Park Road. We've been there for 8 years, every Friday night now.
I know you from the streets.
That's right.
So I don't theater.
Yeah.
Who needs theater, right?
That's real.
All right. So, of course, it's The Worst. 312-981-7200. We got to kick it off with Pete Zimmerman because that's tradition. Pete Zimmerman, you ready for tonight?
Absolutely.
All right. We want to start us off?
Sure.
Okay.
Justin,
What's the worst, Pete?
When you find an amazing parking spot and you park and then you realize you're just way too far away from the machine to pay, and you have to walk like two blocks to the machine, or we have the app, and you're even too far. You're too far to see number.
Yeah,
it's awful.
That's no good.
Terrible. It's the worst.
I mean, it's kind of a first world problem that you're trying to find how to pay for parking.
That's a north side problem.
It's a very north side problem.
yeah,
but it's a good one. All right, Mars, why don't you kick us off? What do you got?
You know what the worst is?
What's the worst, Mars?
When you're at a stranger's house, you don't really know them that well, and you go to the bathroom and the bathroom clogs.
Come on, man. He starts us off with bathroom humor. I love it. That's just encouraging the listeners.
It's trouble. That is just trouble. You don't know what you're just like looking around.
There's got to be a stick.
That's the worst. Yes. All right, Nelson, what do you got?
You know what I really hate is when you're on that social media, you're on that on that timeline, and then you get the message that says, if you're reading this right now, then you've survived the purge, you know? So you were lucky enough to be considered to be kept on to someone's friend on Facebook.
Now you've
got to feel special for some reason.
Anyone who says like any Facebook status where they're like, okay, you know what? I just need to do something new in my life. And I've gotten rid of a lot of friends. So, you know, if you're reading this, you made it.
Thanks.
Right.
I'm really happy that I made it to.
It's like going on varsity,
right?
You know, from JV to varsity now.
It's great. Really excited that I could see pictures of your cat and
it's great
selling your Christian jewelry.
Political rants.
That's your political rant.
Your memes are better than everyone else's. Thanks for keeping me.
You know how to use Tumblr.
All right, let's go. Let's go to the calls. Let's go to Greg. Greg, what's the worst, Greg?
The worst is people who are constant complainers. For example, my wife's aunt She complains about anything and everything, no matter how positive it is. She just finds a way to complain about it.
Yeah, that might be something for therapy. But I mean, hey, yeah. That's kind of what the worst is. I mean, it's the same thing. I'm not going to disagree with you.
Yeah, clearly you know? She's not listening either. The wife.
Yeah, is she sitting there next to you?
No, she's not. I'm working.
All right, thanks, Greg. Thanks for that. Well, there you go. Wife's complaining.
That's right.
Show me wife's complaining. Ding, 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 ding. All right, let's go to the text. All right. You know what's the worst? Jury duty. Yeah, true. I've had jury duty a couple times. Not the worst.
I had a good one.
Yeah, that's on the
recently.
Case.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, Skokie, the jury room in Skokie is incredible. Like lounge chairs, outlets
everywhere.
Did
you make it on a trial?
No. They came in and were like, hey, you guys can go. We were there like an hour.
Here's your $30.
Yep. Right. Here's your $25 from the state.
Nelson, you get make it to a jury?
No, you know, I keep getting called for Chicago jury, which is always a lot of fun. So I always get to make the phone call in of like, hey, remember I moved, guys.
Yeah.
I did.
Where do you live now? Northwest Indiana?
I live in Northwest Indiana now. So it's like I keep getting the cards
you don't
at
get
my
any,
house.
You don't get any for Northwest Indiana?
No. There's no crime in Northwest Indiana, don't you know?
Yeah. You're right in the middle, though. You're right in the middle where Northwest Indiana doesn't know you're there and Chicago's looking for you.
Yeah, they're just – Northwest good. Indiana's just waiting for me to mess up. Because, right. You know?
Right. Your trial.
815, again, this is very personal, but you know what's the worst? When someone leaves the freezer door cracked and all the ice cream melts. You know that just happened to this person. And they're like, you know what? Yeah. I'm so – darn it. I'm texting the radio. That's it. You have pushed me over the edge.
Why me?
this is an early favorite of mine.
Okay.
847. When grocery store workers comment on your food purchases.
Oh yeah. Mm.
If you're at a Whole Foods though, that's where I hear it. Like Whole Foods or Trader Joe's. Mm,
making something nice.
Right. That's where I hear it.
Oh, you shop fancy, huh?
Just
what we rubbing get. It in our face.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I gotta say.
Yeah, but I mean, there is something about that that's just like, I don't need you to talk. This was a funny one. The other morning, I got a 6-pack of beer and a bottle of wine. I had some friends coming over on the weekend. And the woman's like, looks like you're having a party. Like, that's not really a party. Right? Like, if I had a case of beer and, like, a case of wine, I'd be like, yeah, it's a big kegger. It's not really
lonely.
A party. Yeah.
They were just lonely and fishing
it's
for an invitation
party
for
one.
From that one.
It's a party that maybe Thursday night, they were just kind of hanging out, and I can see if I can, you know, drink the rest of it on Friday and Saturday.
I think you should try that again.
Party when you have to work in the morning.
You right. Should bring some Zimas with you. See if they go
if
party.
They sold them.
Their
you know?
Party in 1993.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number, and you can text that number. We're playing the worst tonight a little early because we're doing some RNC coverage tonight at 10. We do have prizes. I didn't even say what the prizes are.
Oh, they're good. Mm-hmm.
Gift certificate to Glenwood Oaks Rib and Chop House. How about that?
Ooh, that's
in
good
Glenwood.
One. That's good.
Yeah.
We got the Pequod's Pizza gift card.
Ooh.
I know, right? It's some good stuff. And still my favorite, a MyPillow. So you can complain about the worst things and get a pillow for it. I don't know anywhere else where you can do that. Where you're like, oh, when grocery store workers comment on your food purchases, great job, here's a pillow.
Right? You can cry yourself to sleep in that pillow at night.
Flip it over, get the cold side.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do more of the worst. Stay with us.
What's going down, y'all?
All right, it's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're playing the worst, 312-981-7200. Nelson Velasquez and Mars Timms in studio with me. Mars Timms, the man behind Pimprov. You see you Friday night at the CIC Theater on the north side. Friday night's at 10:30. Nelson, you can see at Makeshift Up at the Crown Point Community Center. Is that right?
Community Theater.
Community Theater in Crown Point, Indiana. That's the 23rd. And then also Salsation will be playing at the Beat Lounge at Second City coming up August 14th.
Yep.
All right. See, look at that off the top of my head.
Oh, man.
The worst is when you don't have it in front of you, right? All right. Yeah, that's right. All right. So 312-981-7200. We've got some good stuff coming in. Let's go. Okay, here we go. People that say 224 says the worst is people that say often for often? I don't get it.
I don't
off 10?
But like I often that, is that a thing? Miss jokes.
People so. That say off 10, do people say off 10? I'm trying to say it the right way because it's written, so it's, I'm trying to say like,
are you X-ing often? Me?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right. 313 says neighbors making stinky food that stinks up the hallway. Yeah, ooh, that's bad news.
Ouch.
Right?
I feel their pain.
847 gives us a little inside info, a little intel. They say they used to work at Walmart, and they were trained to talk to people about their purchases.
Oh, interesting.
Right. Maybe there's something there that's like the reason that one thing that we all despise, they're trained to
yes.
do.
Yeah. Does that? I guess they're trying to make it more personable, though, because I did like a BizCo gig out at a McDonald's once where they were trying to get improvisers to help the employees learn how to interact with people in a drive-thru better and faster.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of those things where, like, the more personal you are, the more you forget about the fact that you're working part-time and you can't get your full-time hours. So you're like, look, just talk to people. That's compensation enough.
That's compensation. let's go to Kelly. Kelly, what's the worst, Kelly?
The worst is when you have a husband who's not handy and you ask him to go to Home Depot to rent a sanding machine, a sander,
uh-huh.
and you come home to see that not only is the sandpaper lodged in the machine, so is the cord.
What? So the cord is in the machine? So like you sanded the cord?
He sanded the cord and it's yes, the trick.
Did you buy that? And then now you can't bring that back, can you?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm afraid to find out.
No, so this is fresh. This is a fresh wound.
Brand new.
I feel like this segment, thanks, Kelly, I feel like this segment's going down a spousal direction.
Yeah.
Like everything has been about, you know, here's what I, you know, we just don't talk anymore. Wow. Oh, man. 3734 says, worse is getting the senior discount for over 55 when you're only 40.
Ooh.
Yeah, so like you go to the movies or something, like, yes, you're going to get it for $8.50.
Yeah.
But then again, on the other hand.
Yeah, that's not so bad.
On the other hand, yeah, like how many times have you been tempted when you're buying, you know, Fandango tickets and you attempted to hit that senior discount just so you can get, you know, a few bucks off
right.
the flick?
I don't know. I don't think women would like that at all.
Yeah, maybe. It's a gender thing because I look at that like, yes, score.
Yeah.
You know, like I got $2 off this. Right.
A woman like, what are you talking about? I am 45.
312 says, when friends that owe you money ask to borrow more money.
Jeez. Oh, man, I had that on my list too, man. I want to add to that one because it's not only they'll ask for more money, they'll wait until tax refund season.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're just setting you up for like a Judge Mathis episode.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yo, I'll pay you back when I get my tax refund, man.
Yeah.
I'm good for it.
You know, it's just a couple months, man.
Yeah.
It's a backlog at H&R Block.
That's right.
I've been very fortunate. I don't have too many friends who ask me for money. So I guess that's something that you just avoid. You got Nelson. Sounds like you got friends that are got scammed out.
I'm by Gary, Indiana, man. You know, it speaks for itself right there.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying I don't. I let people know right up front.
I ain't got none.
Don't even my closest friends.
That's
nope.
funny. All right, here's Chance. Chance, what is the worst?
So the worst is when you live in the south suburbs and you leave your house at 6:15 in the morning to drive 2.5 hours north to work in Madison. Jeez.
Oh my God.
For the day and realize you forgot your wallet and have no way to fill up your gas tank.
Oh, what do you do?
Engineering. I was supposed to drive up there and back in one day.
No, what do you do in that case? Like, what do you do? Do you just borrow money? $10?
I waited. Well, I asked several places. Western Union won't let you get money if you don't have a photo ID. I had to wait until my girlfriend got off work, was able to drive to my house, get my wallet, give me my information, and I was finally able to activate my Apple Pay, as much as I hate to admit that.
Oh, what? Gosh. Dude. So you couldn't, I mean, what I would do in that situation is I would go to my buddy at work and I'd be like, yo, man, I need $25. I'll pay you back tomorrow.
Yep.
We worked out of Chicago. I was literally two hours away from anybody I knew.
Oh, that's awful.
Here's your solution. You find a piece of cardboard and a marker, and you write down that, hey, I live two hours away.
Exactly.
I left my wallet. I see it all the time.
It works. It works on the Van Buren exit.
That's right.
Well, the art of siphoning is something that I'd like to see come back at some point. You know, the Mad Max style.
You Chance, know? You had a couple of options there. You could have siphoned, or you could have gone expressway ramp.
That's right.
But that is bad, man. Chance, thanks for calling in.
Cool.
That's a good one. That's an early favorite for me.
Yeah.
That's almost like a horror story in the way that you're like, you've exhausted all opportunity to, you know, with no friends to borrow money from. You don't have your license to get money. You don't have your cards because you left them at home. What do you do?
Yeah.
You get MacGyver.
That's
what you do.
I was left on a field trip in high school down at the Art Institute,
what?
Me and three other kids, and we had to figure out how to get back to high school. And
where were you in high school?
Oak Park.
Okay, so you could hop the L?
Yeah, we didn't have any money, so we had to ask people on the street to give us money, and people were nice enough. We were high school kids, and they were like, sure, we'll give these high school
kids.
Really?
They were nice? Chicago was nice to you?
Chicago was nice to us. I mean, if we had had candy and we were like, we need money for our uniforms, they were like, nah, get out of here.
They're like, Oak Park. Okay, we'll do Oak Park. Yeah, we'll do Oak Park.
Kids are all right.
That's better than a basketball team.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. Let's go to Rich. Rich, what's the worst, Rich?
Worse than being mistaken for the senior citizen when you're not. When me and my wife, early in our dating, and we were both already out of college, so we were well into our 20s, mm-hmm. but she was very petite, very slim, you know, probably weighed about 80 pounds soaking wet, so she was small. And at the movie theater, they wanted to know if she wanted the child's discount. And I'm like, gee, thank you for making me feel like pervert of the year, because at that point, I was still,
You're like, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, when we get out after the movie theater, that kind of kills the mood for the rest of the evening.
That is the worst. You got me.
And
that's
I'm like,
good,
looking at my rearview mirrors. Oh, man, you know they got the cops behind me. They're going to make sure I take her home.
You were going to see some rated R movie, and you were like, you got her hand. You were even doing the 80s move.
I don't even remember the movie.
You were doing the move where you put your hand in her back pocket, right?
You walk her around.
If to the point where they thought my date was under 12.
That's
my
crazy.
Mind just went to erase everything else from this evening if you can. All I know is I was living in Florida at the time, but honestly, I really don't remember the movie. All I know is it was in Boca Raton. maybe it's because the ticket lady was like 110 years old, and to her, anybody under 40 seemed a minor. I'm hoping that's what was going through her mind.
Probably not what it was. And you can never go back to Boca Raton, so that's good.
I'm sure I'm still up on the wall of the police station even now.
Thanks, Rich. That's good. That's a good one, too. Those are two good ones there, Chance and Rich, right?
I like those.
All right, so let's get to some of the texts here that are coming in. 602, the worst is when you take a picture and you forget that your last picture was a selfie, and you get scared staring at your grotesque face on the phone screen. Both the comics are like, it happens. It's not that gross.
It happens when you look like a goblin.
Yeah, right. 773, when you make a 3-point turn to go the other way after waiting for a freight train to pass, and then you see the last train car in your rearview mirror.
Hey. Yeah. I got like 3 trains by my house, like between, on the route to my house. And that happens. I get caught by trains a lot. So that's personal. That's personal for me right there. Me and Pacific Union got problems.
313 says, going to the grocery store for beer and toilet paper. Awkward dead silence ensues. Really?
Those go hand in hand.
I've been a cashier. That would be nothing. There's much more curious combinations.
I'm sure
than
there
toilet
is.
Paper and beer, right?
Yeah.
Can you remember any curious combinations you've seen?
I remember there was this one guy, and I can't remember the joke, but he was always like, he would point it out. It'd be like, condoms and toothpaste or something, and be like, guy, look at this, huh? You know, all right, bud, I don't care.
Yeah,
there's a UPC code on it. I don't care. Yeah. The last thing I care about is what you're doing with that stuff. You don't have to point it out. the fluoride. All right, okay, you got it. You nailed it. You've made this awkward.
Yeah.
All right. All right, let's keep going here. 312-981-7200 before we go to the break. Well, let's go to the break because we got a big break here. We'll take a break. We'll go to the news. We'll continue with the worst. Call up now. Get in the queue. 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst for prizes. Stay with us.
It's going down, y'all.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're playing the worst, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. We got gift certificates. We got a MyPillow to give away. We got a lot of stuff tonight, including Mars Timms. It's a comedian who is part of the ensemble Pimprov, which plays on Friday nights at 10:30 at CIC Theater, 1422 West Irving Park Road. And also Nelson Velasquez, he is a man. He's one of the guys in Salsation.
Yep.
Great sketch comedy group here in Chicago. Been performing for years. They are going to be playing at Second City on August 14th. He's also got a show this is it Friday night or
Saturday?
Saturday night.
Yep.
At the Crown Point Community Theater.
Yes,
makeshift
sir.
Up. Nelson, comedian who lives in Northwest Indiana.
Yep.
Love it out there. All right. Let's get to it, Pete. You got any more you want to start off before we go back to the text and the phones? What's the worst, Pete?
Yeah, I'll go with the one that's been steaming my bean for a while. What's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
When you go to a bar or restaurant and they have overly complicated bathroom fixtures. Like, I'm just trying to wash my hands, not judge a science project.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Just how do you turn it
on? I'm like
waving
my hands. Like, how do things go on?
That's not soap. That's lotion.
Ugh. Yeah. The worst.
Where do you dry your hands? What do you use?
Yeah.
Agreed.
And I can never figure out how to turn those things on. I'm just waving. It's like doing the robot.
I feel like someone's
machine.
Like taping it on the other side of the glass. And that's it's like some YouTube thing that is really, really popular, but we're just too old to know it's popular.
Yeah.
Like it's one of those, you know?
I went viral in the bathroom.
Yeah, this guy.
Look at this guy. Ooh, ooh, ooh. He can't find it. I got sound
faucet
effects
shaming.
Faucet shaming. All right, Nelson, what do you got? Let's give us another one.
You know what is really the worst? When you've hung out with your buddies all night long and you get off the L train station mm-hmm. and you all say your goodbyes and then you all walk in the same direction.
The same train.
And you're like, I just said goodbye to you, man.
Yeah, double goodbye. Still good. You're right. That is the worst.
That's the worst.
It's the worst, too. It's more than like walking in the same direction. If you continue to walk and then have to take the same train.
Right. Yeah.
You're together for another 45 minutes.
Exactly. You're rehashing the same conversation. All right, just had.
Good to see you. All right. It was great to see you, too. Say hi to your family. All right.
We'll do. So which way are you heading? Same way you are?
Take the red line, yeah. Ah, cool. You could get hardcore and just take different train, like different
I've
cars.
I've done that, dude. I'm going south. You're going north? I'm going south.
I'll go south.
Yeah, yeah.
Then let that one go and pick up the other one.
Yeah.
All right, Mars, what do you got?
All right. What's the worst?
What's
is
the worst?
When two black guys are trying to do a complicated handshake in front of a white person that goes horribly wrong.
Where it's not good, it's not smart.
It's
not
just like, the hands are spinning around. And then it's just like, nope, now we're just touching elbows and doing the chicken dance. It's, there's no book on handshakes.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Right. There's no book on handshakes.
No book on handshakes.
That's Mars Timms' new book. There's no book on handshakes.
That's right. Need a handshake book.
It's like the old Boy Scout books where it's like how to tie a knot, but instead it's different
arrows.
And we should do that.
We should.
We should find a published. That's a perfect pitch, right?
Yep.
I would just give it out on GN Radio.
Yeah, somebody's going to steal it.
Yeah.
Amazon's all over that.
I've been there, man. You go in for like a regular handshake and then somebody just like grabs you and pulls you in. Next thing you know, they're beating you on the back and spinning you around, giving you the Heimlich maneuver. It's tough.
All right, 224 says, realizing that while I stand in line at Dominick's, okay, the store's closed now, but with a package of legs pantyhose for my wife, that the queen size pair that I'm holding are a size that would fit me, as if they were to buy them for myself. Yeah.
It's 2016, man.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
that's like a normal day, man. Like,
they're good. They give you support.
Yeah. Hey, when it's cold outside,
you might turn around and rob that Dominick's that now doesn't exist.
319 gets political. The worst is when you realize that the giant space rock that destroys the world doesn't exist, and we may be stuck with Hillary or Trump. Yeah,
I would be more concerned with the amount of debt and credit I ran up, thinking that the world is going to end at that point. It's like, man, I'm stuck with the bill.
Yeah, exactly. The asteroid will be here in 9 months. Good. That gives me a lot of time to do some things. I'm going to finance some things.
Right. I think Ice Age 3 has copywritten that story,
yeah, right. 773 says, the worst is no AC, killing sexy time mood. Okay, well, maybe.
Some people like it sweaty.
Yeah.
705, the worst is unplucked fried chicken. What is that?
I've seen that, and that is disgusting.
What is that?
Sometimes you order a pan of fried chicken, and they have not plucked all the feathers off of it, and you see fried chicken that has feathers still on it. Oh. I was at a party. I saw it. I don't even eat chicken on the bone, and I saw it, and I was like, That's one of the reasons why.
I've never seen that.
I've never seen that.
Wow. Oh, yeah. It's like a voodoo ceremony.
That's a good one. 262, running into someone at a grocery store, then having to avoid them till after you're done talking. That is true. That mm-hmm. just happened to me the other day. I actually had a friend of mine who I'd known for a couple of years, who I'd just seen like a month ago. He was walking towards me, and I was putting something in the cart, mm-hmm. right? And I didn't catch him till we kind of almost made eye contact. But he, instead of making eye contact, and he didn't see me, but instead he like almost made like a smile wink to what I was in my cart. You know, like I had like some cheese or whatever. He's like, oh. But he never looked up to see me. So I was about to say, hey. And then he just walked by and I'm like, all right. It's weird that we've somehow connected over my groceries.
It's a grocery store version of the biker nod.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Right. But really, I was like, huh, okay. Well, there you go. All right. Let's go to Jesus. Is it Jesus or Jesus?
Yeah, it's Jesus.
Jesus. What's the worst, Jesus?
What's the worst? You're trying to do something nice for your wife. So when she leaves, I thought I'd clean the house and everything. Mm-hmm. I'd been away for a year and a half in the military. And she's been cleaning the house by herself the whole time. So
nice gesture.
I start off on the dining room table, and I dust it with furniture polish. And we had brand-new hardwood floors. And I'm looking at the table. I'm looking at the rag, and I'm looking at the furniture polish. And then I look at the floors, and I say, I bet this would polish the floors really nice.
Uh-oh.
And, because I didn't know it was going to make them super slippery. She comes home with groceries in her hand. She falls. And she's like, why are the floors so slippery? The kids fall. Everyone's falling. And then 3 days later, there's a welcome home party for me at our house.
Oh, no.
So my sister-in-law walks in with a plate that she brought in, and she falls. My other brother's wife walks in with heels, and she falls, and everyone's just falling at the party, and so then to make it worse, I feel like an 8-year-old because everyone's like, why are your floors so slippery? Why are they so slippery? And my wife goes, go ahead, tell them what you did, go ahead.
You will never live that
everyone
down.
Everyone gets really quiet. You're like an 8-year-old with your head down saying, I put furniture polish on the floor. And I used a Swifter to spread it around, so I polished the floors a bit too much. And everyone's just laughing at you the whole night.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's good. That's good, though. That's
later,
good.
It finally wears out. You know,
I like that. I like that one a lot. Jesus, thanks for that. That's good. That's, hey, he had a nice gesture.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know? I mean.
No good deed goes unpunished.
It is. It's almost like a sitcom.
Right.
Like, just like the idea of all the people that fell with different things in their hands.
It's a world star hip-hop situation right there. That's what I would see. Yeah,
he turned his house into a bowling alley. Yeah.
262 says the worst is when you step on a Lego. Yes. The worst is when someone slows down instead of speeding up onto an expressway. Like when you get on the expressway, you're right, man. You really got to hit it like it's Star Wars. Like
make that jump to light
speed. Yeah, you got to jump. You can't be messing around like that. I got some more here. Hold on. Let me go down. We'll get all these out. The worst is when someone leaves a box of cookies in the pantry, but when you go to get one, the box is empty. Again, that sounds like you're taking it out on a family member, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, it's personal.
Someone.
Yeah.
That's, I didn't read it right. The worst is when someone leaves a box of cookies in the pantry. There, the box is empty. Ron. I like this one. This is a competitor for the top spot. 630. As a jewel cashier, customers have no right to complain about us. Now it gets all caps. Yes, I will triple bag your loaf of bread because you need to walk a block. That's true. From here on out, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that bit. Can I get a triple bag on that? I got to walk a block. I'm going to go. It's a 630 number, so I'm going to do it in the western suburbs.
There you go.
And I'm just going to keep doing it until I finally get to this person. Find and be like, jewel. You.
They're like, get out.
Get out. After a long day at work, 815, after a long day at work, you get home and the dog has diarrhea.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
705, you know what's the worst? It's when I saw 92-year-old former presidential candidate Bob Dole at the Republican convention last night on TV and his pants hiked up to his nipples.
Wow.
He did.
He was like the only like recent establishment Republican that actually showed up.
Right. And now you make fun of his clothes.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
Give him credit. Come on. 92.
He's got that bad arm, too.
Come on.
Yeah, so right.
He's earned it.
Yeah.
No respect.
Yeah, I know.
This is a pro Bob Dole panel.
I know, right?
We got real pro Bob Dole. Yeah, we're a lot like that.
Come on.
That could have gone either way for the texter, though. We could have been like, yeah, forget Bob Dole. But instead, we went pro Bob Dole.
That's right.
That's how we get it.
Respect.
Respect.
I am not kidding. 312, they're probably joking, but they said, how did you know my husband's name was Ron?
Oh.
773, having to explain to the store clerk that your small child accidentally walked out with the candy. All right, yeah. Oh, don't, this one will get me, I get really, really super frustrated when it comes to movie theater etiquette.
Oh, yeah, this one.
The worst is when you think you got an empty movie theater and someone walks in right as the movie starts and sits right in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That just happened to me. Just happened.
Don't get me started. I have complained about this week after week, but, you know, I go to the Roosevelt Icon, which is on Roosevelt and Canal, essentially, over there. And they have assigned seating. So that's a new thing where it's almost like, you know, it's just straight out of, I'll pick these two.
Yeah.
And you can see if someone has the seats right next to you.
Ooh.
You know, it's really great. Like, and you can actually, it's taken the same etiquette that we know in the public bathroom with stalls or with urinals.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
you could say, okay, we need one between. Except somebody always breaks that.
Yeah.
It's not crowded and they're like, oh, I'll sit right next to them because nobody cares. I'm like,
yeah.
There is rules. Yeah. Am I the only one that cares about the rules? One should be between us, right? It's assigned seats. That's the whole point. It's not that crowded in here for Secret Life of Pets. You figure it out, man. That gets me really riled up.
Market 8, Smokey.
Exactly. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue the worst here. We'll wrap it up and give away the three prizes for our top three candidates for the worst. Stay with us.
It's going down, y'all. Come the worst, my people come first.
You know
the deal. When worst come the worst.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to do some analysis, reaction to the Republican National Convention. Day two. Exciting. Tonight was Make America Work Again. It's all about the economy. We'll have Charles Lipson from University of Chicago. We'll talk with Chris Roebling, who's one of our guests on Touche. We'll have Congressman Hultgren from the Illinois delegation calling in. Paris Schutz from Channel 11. Tell us about some of the protests in the Illinois delegation today. A whole bunch of stuff coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. But right now, we finish up tonight. The worst. Let's go to Pat. Pat, you are on the line. Pat, what's the worst?
The worst is my grandson lives in the South Loop, and he was out walking his dog one day, and he heard some noise and looked up, and there was a man who had committed suicide and hit the trees and then landed right down by him.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
That is the worst.
Wow.
You're taking this segment really literally.
Yeah.
It really is. So.
What do you do with that?
What did we do with that?
No. I'm saying, what do we do as a panel? I didn't say, what did you do with that?
Yeah.
You leave it alone and let the authorities handle it.
That is actually the worst.
However, he asked his landlord if he could move. And the landlord said yes, he could move.
All right,
yeah,
there you go.
Well,
Pat, thanks for that. Thank you for that. That's terrible. It's also, I wouldn't disqualify Pat.
Yeah.
But it's the worst. It's definitely the worst story, but it also happened to somebody else. It was her son.
Ah, yes.
True.
But yep. I'm only doing that because otherwise you got to give her all three presents gifts because that's the worst. That's
to give to her
worst.
Son.
Yeah. All right, let's go to George. George, what's the worst, George?
I just got back from my family reunion and realized that I forgot my wife's suitcase.
That's awful, man.
Yeah.
When did you realize?
The whole weekend. I realized it when we got to the airport.
Oh,
and
no.
We're unloading the car, and the airport's an hour away from our house. There was no way to get back home.
Was this before or after the family reunion?
This was before.
Oh.
So we were at the airport getting ready to leave and unloading the car, and her suitcase wasn't there. And she decided to go anyway. So we had to go buy some clothes, and of course she had to tell everybody and go to the dollar store, get toothbrushes, terrible.
I would have forced my wife to wear my clothes. That's what I would have done.
And it was our anniversary, our 26th wedding anniversary.
Oh, man, George, and I feel bad for you.
A whole new wardrobe, sweetheart, for our anniversary.
Yeah, right. There you go. Yes. Yeah, you could have spun it there. And yes. I also feel like it was a lot of this, wasn't it? Hey, could you get another drink? Unless you're going to lose it, George. And then the whole party laughs at you, and you're like, yeah, thanks, man, thanks.
Family reunions are the worst also.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, we had 110 people there. It was terrible.
Jeez.
I like that.
It was great, but it was great, but you know.
Well, thanks, George. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
That's a tough one, man. That's a tough one. That almost cracks the top. You know, we kind of have our favorites right now, and that's a good one because, man, that is the worst.
Yeah.
Let's get to some of these texts. 815, waiting for a train on the way to work when you think it's done and the crossing opens just to come back down for a train on the other track coming in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
That is the worst.
Nelson, have you had that?
Yes, I have. That's a Brown Line problem, too.
Yeah.
773, still stuffing your pockets with snacks instead of paying for them while at the movie theater after 30.
That is true. I still do that, too.
Yeah, man. And if you ain't bootlegging, you ain't trying. That's the way I look at it.
Right.
262 says, the worst, actually getting sick in the summertime and having people think you're playing hooky from work.
Oh, Yeah.
They say, trust me, I wish I was pulling a Ferris Bueller at a Cubs game or a beach instead of having a fever. And coughing up lung butter.
Ooh,
never heard that before. Yeah, that's good.
You go to work when you are sick in the summer. You cannot waste those days off from work actually being sick. You go.
You're willing to be contagious.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah,
what do I care about those people?
Just for appearances. 224, this one's great. The worst is when someone is telling you a story and you tell them, oh, yeah, you already told me that story already, and they just continue the story. That is the worst.
Yeah.
That's a great one. Oh, that's, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I might need to take this promo and rethink, Pete. That's a good one.
That is a good one.
It almost breaks the top three here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
We can drop one off.
I don't know. There's such good ones. All right. All right, let's see. I still got a couple here. Or maybe I don't. No, that was the last one. All right, good. All right, I think we got them all. Did we get them all?
Sounds like we did.
All right, let me read the stuff for the gifts that were given away tonight. Third place is going to get a gift certificate to Glenwood Oaks Ribs and Chop House, the restaurant of choice since 1974, located in Glenwood. Second place is going to get a Pequod's Pizza gift card featuring world-famous pizza and the signature caramelized cheese crust. Visit them in Chicago or Morton Grove or online at pequodspizza.com. And first place, because you gotta, is a MyPillow. Guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. I know people would be like, oh, I kind of want the food. I'm like, no, trust me, take the pillow.
Yeah, take that pillow.
That's like a good, for me, that's like a 20-year investment.
Yeah.
Because when you're done with that pillow, you're like, it becomes the guest pillow. Like, you throw it up in the closet, and you're like, oh, yeah, no, see?
Yeah, dog lays on it.
And you're going to use the pillow more. You get more use out of the pillow.
Yeah.
Unless you're an insomniac.
Yeah, right. All right, Mars Timms is our guest tonight. You can see Mars at Pimprov every Friday night at 10:30 at the CIC Theater, 1422 West Irving Park Road. Nelson Velasquez is going to be at the Crown Point Community Theater this Saturday night with Makeshift Up, and then also with his sketch group, Salsation, which is on stage at Second City's Beat Lounge on August 14th. All right.
decisions.
All right, here we go. Decisions. Here's what we're going to do. I've made a decision here.
All right.
If that works for you guys.
Yes.
We're going to have a third place tie.
All right.
All right. Okay. This is for the Glenwood Oaks Rib and Chop House. We are going to give, let me find it here. Fourth place or tie for third place, 224. The worst is when someone's telling you a story and you tell them that you told that story already and they continue to tell the story. That's great, isn't it?
Yeah, that's good. One
before. That's good. All right. And third place is going to be Met, or the tie and third place is going to be for Chance, who forgot his wallet. Mm-hmm. He called in and he told us that he works in the south, or he lives in the south suburbs. He drives 2.5 hours to Madison, Wisconsin, and realizes when he gets there he left his wallet at home.
Yep.
He then is on a remote, so he has no friends to ask for money, and he has to get gas to go back. So he has a huge ordeal to try and get his girlfriend to go get into his house, get the wallet. He ends up getting Apple Pay. That just sounds like the worst.
Yeah.
It just sounds like the worst,
right? That's
a
whole lot of business.
That's a whole lot of business. That's like, that's one that we want to give to someone who really, it sounds like in the middle of that was the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The second place is a little bit more gross. 705. This is for second place. This is for the Pequod's Pizza gift card. The worst, unplucked fried chicken.
Oh, yeah. I've been there, baby. That's right. That's right. It is horrible. Absolutely horrible. I think back to James Bond's Live and Let Die with the whole voodoo priest and all that other stuff. Unplucked chicken is awful.
It's free range and organic at that point.
Oh, is this just is the idea that it's like one feather kind of thing?
I saw multiple feathers on more than one piece. It was a
big
like it was like an aluminum tray full. And
someone was just, were they just like lazy? Did they skip some feathers? Like, is that a thing you do? I always thought you got chicken without the feathers.
Yeah, that's what I always thought too. But this tray came, I don't even remember the place, west side of Chicago, but they're unplucked fried chicken on that tray.
Unbelievable.
It was horrible.
All right. So that means that number one is here, and we are going to give it to someone who called in. Jesus called in about taking the polish from the table and putting it on the floor, and then for the weekend party, having everybody fall down in a hilarious, everybody loves Raymond kind of way. There's a lot of threes company going on. It sounded like at Jesus's party over the weekend.
Hardwood slip and slide.
Hardwood slip and slide. Jesus, you are the winner tonight. You're going to get the My Pillow, which maybe you could just put down. Maybe you could just put that
slide
down
across. You stand on this. I'll push you across.
I'll push you across. All right, that's the worst tonight. Thanks, Nelson. Thanks, Mars. Thanks for playing tonight, everybody at home. We will be back next Tuesday night. We'll do it again at 9:00. Usually we do this at 10 o'clock, but because of the RNC and the DNC, we're doing coverage of wrapping up after 10 o'clock in the next 2 weeks. So join us next week. We'll do it at 9 o'clock. Thanks. All right. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. All right. We are going to give analysis and reaction to the Republican National Convention.
This
Rob,
be awesome.
Did you catch any of it tonight?
I'll tell you what. Say what you will about New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
Yeah?
He knows how to speak.
He does.
And he knows how to whip up a conservative crowd.
He's been doing it for a long time.
He has, and he knows exactly what buttons to press.
You know, he always, and we'll talk with our guys about this too, but he always, always seems to be the guy who and it does a very good job at these conventions. I mean, just in the last couple months, they've sort of created this buffoon kind of thing for him.
Yeah.
But he knows what he's doing politically.
You know, think about our current president. Again, policies aside, he really knows how to handle questions.
Right.
So they get in Chris Christie's face on the floor of the convention. Then they start asking him, well, aren't you really upset? I mean, and here's Matt Lauer. You've got to be really angry, aren't you?
Right, right.
And Christie goes, yeah, I'm upset. I'm a competitor. I was competing for something and I lost. However, and then he just continues on with this narrative of how, you know, he's working to get Donald Trump elected. I mean, he's brilliant.
Yeah,
he really is.
Yeah, he is. So we'll talk about Chris Christie and the other speakers at the RNC Day 2. Oh,
Cleveland rocks. Cleveland rocks.
Cleveland.
Oh, yeah. Cleveland rocks. Cleveland rocks.
Won't the same with me.
Cleveland is the city. Come from Cleveland.
Oh,
city. City that we come from. Cleveland.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, another night at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. Tonight's theme was Make America Work Again. We've got analysis, reaction, and updates from Cleveland and from here in Chicago as we get reaction to what we saw. We don't get a chance. Pete and I, we did the show tonight. We had Abraham on, who just did the worst, talked about transportation earlier in the show. So essentially, we didn't get a chance to watch these speeches at the RNC, but that's why we lined up some people who could do it for us, including Charles Lipson. He is a professor of political science at the University of Chicago. He joins us now. Professor Lipson, how are you tonight?
We do the heavy lifting, so you don't have to,
That's
Justin.
Right, that's right. So let's talk about it. What, first off, is that, did they stick to the theme tonight, which was Make America Work Again?
No. No, they didn't. In fact, I was just thinking about it a minute ago, and I was thinking if you had listened to the speeches and been asked, guess what the theme is, I think there were some excellent speeches, but you would have never guessed that theme. I think there were two themes. One is Hillary is a crook. Mm-hmm. And she's risky and she's dangerous.
I thought that was tomorrow night.
Well, you know, it's an evergreen.
Yeah, right. They just keep going to it.
And in fact, Chris Christie really laid it out as a prosecutor and had the crowd yelling guilty after each set of charges that he laid out as he went around the world and talked about essentially bad judgment. I think that and Ben Carson came back with a lot of the same things. I think in one case he went a little over the top. He said he talked about her connection to Saul Alinsky. I don't think people care about that. And then Saul Alinsky has a dedication in his book to Lucifer. Okay, it's a real reach to do all of
that. Absolutely, right.
I mean, I like Lucifer as much as the next guy, but I mean, really. On the other hand, I thought those were generally pretty effective speeches. But the real winner was Donald Trump Jr., the son.
Oh, yeah. How was his speech?
Eldest son. He knocked it out of the park and didn't do it on steroids. I mean, he was just excellent. And he was excellent in two ways. He personalized his father, but it wasn't they had a daughter who did some of that, too, Tiffany, who talked about her father's attitude toward her report cards and so forth. Very, I mean, it's a very strong sort of family presentation. But the key thing that Donald Trump Jr. did was said, look, our dad had us out on the work sites early. He had us learning from people who got a PhD in street smarts and hard work. I know how to drive a cat. All of us do know how to drive a Caterpillar as easily as we drive our car. Mm-hmm. It just had a blue collar ring to it, which is pretty unusual for a family of billionaires.
Right. And that's important, too, because that, you know, there was a lot of, I guess, criticism based on last night's speeches, especially with Melania Trump, that she missed an opportunity to personalize, to connect, to sort of sell Donald Trump as a person with and what he stands for, instead sort of going back to the platitudes. So this was accomplished tonight, it sounds like.
I thought that it was accomplished not so much by Tiffany. Some people seem to like her talk. I didn't particularly, but it's neither here nor there. It was short. The real winner was Donald Jr. But I thought that the issue with I will say one thing that kind of bothers me, but I feel ambivalent about it. When Christie was having people say guilty, and then the crowd out in the arena is saying lock her up, it reinforces at home a notion that people already have that she is totally untrustworthy. In fact, I always wonder who are the 26% who think she is trustworthy. I didn't know she had that big a family. But the thing that I don't like, the idea that our politics is really a blood sport, about that the other side is not the enemy, it's the opponent. And there was some of this that was so strong that you wonder, would people at home like it or not? I understand they were feeding red meat to the audience there. I just don't know.
But the audience there, I mean, you're right. I mean, the audience there has made up their mind. They already sort of went through the presentation of him being the nomination. So they all know this. And obviously Hillary Clinton is the enemy to that arena. But you may be onto something. I mean, yesterday we saw that with the mother of one of the people killed in Benghazi, where she went out her way to say that the blood was on Hillary Clinton's hands. Tonight, again, as you're telling us, I mean, they kind of went after her in a way that he was almost like a prosecutor. Do the people who are on the fence, who may not have a trust of Hillary Clinton, think this is a little bit overboard? Because here comes Pence, who's supposed to do the same thing tomorrow.
I don't know. And, of course, Hillary won't know until she makes until she gets focus groups. I mean, I think they were trying. I thought that one of the strong points that Donald Jr. made was that his father doesn't need a focus group to make up his mind, that he's decisive and so forth. I thought that they put his best foot forward. I thought that was pretty good. I think that they're, in a sense, still recovering from what should have been a kind of slam dunk. You have the wife of the nominee come out and say, you know, I love my husband, he's a wonderful guy. And it turns out that she had plagiarized part of the speech. And it looks as if she had ripped apart a well-written speech by competent speechwriters, and then with her own crew of people put together something else, and somewhere along the way they dropped it. That was an unforced error. But I think the key here is it's mostly going to be a negative campaign. And as far as each candidate is concerned, if the campaign is about the other guy or the other woman, the other candidate, I win. I mean, in other words, Trump's biggest asset is Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton's biggest asset is Donald Trump. They're trying to take some of that away. And, of course, Hillary's people will do exactly the same thing next week.
Good wrap. Charles Lipson, he's a political science professor at the University of Chicago. He's checking in with us all week to give us his perspective on what we're missing by doing a live show during the Republican National Convention. Tomorrow night, we're going to air the live speech of Vice President candidate Mike Pence's, the governor from Indiana, his speech that will be in primetime. So here on the download, you can hear it on 720 WGN, and we'll have Professor Lipson on the program as well. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Thanks for your thoughts.
Absolutely my pleasure, Justin.
All right, we continue our wrap-up of tonight's RNC Day 2, Make America Work Again. Chris Roebling joins me now. Chris Roebling, the better half of Touche, which you can hear every Monday.
Well,
I would say the same. When Dave's on next week, I'd be like, Dave, let's get rid of that, Chris.
You just say that to whoever is on.
Chris, all right, so we didn't get a chance to watch tonight. Did they stick? We just talked with Professor Lipson, and he said they didn't stick with the Make America Work Again. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think that it's okay, but I do want to step back, and I want to say, and I maybe Professor Lipson did just moments ago, but we all, as Americans, need to reflect on the fact that 13 months ago, Donald Trump announced his campaign, and 99.9% of the smart people in the world said, this is a bloviating sideshow that's going to be fun to watch for, you know, somewhere between 3 and 7 weeks, and it's going to go way up high in the sky, it's going to light up the sky, the night sky, and then it's going to explode and fall back to Earth. That is what 99% of them said. And the guy got nominated today. Yeah. This is one of the most incredible, incredible American political stories in history. It's improbable. It's unlikely.
It was utterly unusual. It's really unique. And I think there are folks, not just in the Never Trump movement, but there are folks all over the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, probably all over the world, who are sitting back saying, what just happened?
Is it possible? I mean, we've been talking about this in Touche for a long time now, but is it possible that the constant sort of Never Trump movement, where everyone likes to sort of, you know, share the article on Facebook, what was this guy thinking, that may be to Donald Trump's advantage, in the sense that it's obvious that he's got momentum right now? It's obvious that he's got some numbers behind him, you know, obviously in the middle of a convention. But does it play to his advantage that most people who might rally against him are just kind of playing him off as a joke?
Yes, I think that it did. I think it did very much. I think that what you saw out of Trump was him thriving on that kind of opposition. I think Trump was a guy who wanted desperately, daily, hourly, in this continuous news cycle, to be seen as crashing through political correctness, crashing through accepted norms. So the more people said, this is hideous, this guy is not appropriate, we've got to stop this guy, it was actually conveying one of Trump's principal messages. So the folks who were in opposition that way were helping Trump define himself as contrary to the status quo.
Now, let me ask you this. This is something I brought up at the beginning of the show. Obviously, a lot paid to the plagiarism controversy from last night, which I don't think is that big of a deal, because I think in politics it happens more than we think. But for a candidate like Donald Trump, who is playing this establishment outsider game where he's not like the candidates that he's running against, his opponent is crooked, she's a liar, the scandals like this where you start to see maybe lying from their point of view, or, you know, like Melania lifting something, plagiarism is essentially lying. Do they start to play the game a little bit, a game that they didn't run on, the idea that they are a little bit the same as everybody else that's running for president?
Absolutely. And Paul Manafort made things worse. Paul Manafort turned this into a 2-day story. He fumbled the ball. He was handed the ball on the 2-yard line, and he fumbled before crossing into the end zone on the morning programs today, when he couldn't find it within himself to say, this was a mix-up, this was a terrible mishap, this is, Melania has already sent a note to Michelle Obama apologizing. I, Paul Manafort, take total responsibility. It should never have happened. It'll never happen again.
On to bigger things, right?
And on to bigger things. You know, instead, Paul got out there, and I've known him for 36 years. We're not in any sense friends or anything, but, you know, Paul is not a guy to take responsibility for anything. He's the guy who, you know, when the potted plant falls over, he's the guy who's backing up towards the door to scamper out the front door before anybody, you know, notices that he was standing next to it. But anyway, Paul turned this into a soap opera. And that, getting back to your point, which I agree with, not only prolonged the story and diverted attention from the candidate's message and wasted precious time during the convention, but it also begins to bring the Trump brand, that we're totally different, we're totally straight, we're totally honest with you, it brings that brand down, you know, to the level of us mere mortals.
Do you feel, Professor Lipson kind of brought this up as well, that tonight there was a lot of, it seemed to be impromptu Hillary bashing, what happened in Chris Christie's speech, where he essentially played prosecutor and everyone was yelling guilty. Do you think that there's a point where the people who are in the arena and the diehards that are going to be in Trump's camp, they love that kind of stuff. But if you're playing for the independent voter who might swing one way or the other, is there a point where it's too much to sort of continue to bash the person Hillary Clinton?
I think it's important to put forward a positive program that Trump is going to deliver. I think every voter needs to know that Trump, what they get with Trump. At the same time, if this ends up being a conversation about Trump, then I think it is highly likely that Trump will not prevail. It is baked into the messaging of this campaign that Trump needs this conversation to be about Hillary, and Hillary needs the conversation to be about Trump. Mm-hmm. And that arises, I believe, Justin, and I think you were one who said this a while ago, but I mean, that arises directly from the fact that both of these candidates have historically high levels of, you know, disapproval. Okay. And that's just yet another totally unusual aspect of this election year, that you've got two candidates who are running against each other, and they possess the two worst approval ratings of all candidates for president since the institution of modern polling.
How did we get here? You're right. I mean, it's crazy to think
that. I believe that we are here, and I believe this is all of a type with polarization in Congress. This is all of a type with gridlock. I believe this is all of a type with binary choices on the floor of the House or the floor of the Senate. And here is what I mean by that. In the post-war economy, we had an era of good feeling. So you'd be a Democrat, I'd be a Republican. We're on the floor of the House, and we'd say, you know what? You might say, I want $100 billion for this new program. I'd say, well, the program's aims and intentions are good, but let's only do $50 billion. Then we'd shake hands, and we'd go off, and we'd say, it's a brand new program, it'll do great things, and we're only doing it $50 billion, but it'll grow from there. Okay. As long as our economy was growing, as long as we were dominant in the world economy, we could get away with that. But Republicans are possessed of an almost, I would say, Woody Allen-like depression. Why? Because now we have $17 trillion of debt. And that $17 trillion of debt has eliminated the room for the happy middle compromise. Mm. It's no longer, I'll give you $50 billion for your program, Justin. It's more like, I'll shut down the government rather than spend the $50 billion, even though I agree with the aims of your program. Why? Because we are in hock to the Chinese for 40 cents that we're spending out of every dollar. So it's dire times, dire circumstances, and that basically is like an ocean that covers up the common ground between our two ideological islands.
And that's why you get a non-politician running for president and having success doing so.
Well, right. I thought the guy most out of step, the three or four guys most out of step were definitely Kevin McCarthy tonight, mm-hmm. who is totally an insider and has no interest whatsoever. I mean, he has disdained the Tea Party from the moment it showed up. In fact, he gave the job of minding and tending to the Tea Party to our own Peter Roskam from the West Suburbs. And then you had Mitch McConnell up there. Now, Mitch is, I think, by Republican standards, he's a good heart. He wants to do what's right. But Mitch is one of these guys who's stuck in the reality of 60 votes. If he doesn't have 60 votes, he can't get anything done. So he's just compromising all over the place to try to get to 60 votes. That has made him the focus of evil in the modern world in the eyes of the Tea Party. So, I mean, I'm kind of amazed that Mitch made it in and out of there without a few tomatoes or, you know, avocados from that California avocado grower.
Yeah,
who, by the way, whoever she is, I've never seen her in a movie, but apparently she's an actress and she's a farmer and she loves avocados, and she did a tremendous job.
Well, we got about a minute here. Let me ask you about what are you looking for? You're going to be here tomorrow night, and we'll watch the speech, but what are you most looking forward to tomorrow night? Tomorrow night, the nation gets to meet on a national stage Mike Pence. There's still, I think tomorrow's Ted Cruz tomorrow. I mean, what do we expect for tomorrow?
Well, I think it's going to be this balance. I think that as the days go on and hopefully culminating in Trump's own speech, you know, you're just going to get a more refined version of what is the Trump program. And really, what do we get? I know we hear these nostrums as we make America great again. Put something onto that. What are we really getting with Trump? And then the other is, how bad is Hillary, and how contrary to the interests of the United States facing all of these issues domestically and all of these threats and enemies internationally, how bad has she failed? What do we know about her character and background? I think you're just going to see refinements on those two themes from here on out.
Great. There you go. Chris Roebling nails it. He will be here tomorrow night. We're going to broadcast the speech live. We'll do some analysis around the speech. Chris Roebling, who is the better half of of the segment Touche that you can hear on the download every Monday night. Chris, thanks for joining us tonight.
Great to be with you. Thanks a lot.
We've got much more to come here with analysis and reaction from tonight's Republican National Convention. What I'm interested in, I want to talk with Per Schutz, who's going to join us after the break. I'm interested in the Illinois delegation, because they got a chance to speak on the floor today during the roll call. A lot of the states got to say, we are the biggest corn producers. If you drink bourbon, you drank it from Kentucky, and we give it to Donald Trump. And Illinois, all Tim Snyder talked about was Bruce Rauner.
Yeah.
I was like, you couldn't talk about the Cubs?
We have got the greatest governor, who, by the way, is not here this evening in the country.
So we'll talk with Paris about that, who also covered the Illinois delegation. I didn't realize this, but Lewandowski, the former
Corey?
Campaign,
yeah,
Corey,
Lewandowski,
he
yeah.
made those statements about someone being accountable from the Illinois delegation breakfast today.
Oh,
yeah, he was a speaker. Yeah, I didn't know this either, but I guess Stacey Dash didn't show up. That's what Paris was talking about last night, that she was supposed to be the speaker. She was replaced by Corey. Corey comes in, he makes a speech he's talking to reporters, and that's what got pulled out nationally. So we'll talk with Paris about being a part of that breakfast.
Stacey Dash,
who's probably not going to make it to the Illinois
She is
delegation.
This presidential cycle's Sarah Palin. I mean, honestly.
She didn't even show up today, so I don't know what her deal is. Maybe she recognized that, and they're like, pull back. You don't belong here. Pull back. I don't know. We'll ask Paris. And also, he had a chance to step outside and be front and center for some of the protests. So we'll talk with him coming up after the news.
Oh, Cleveland rocks. Ooh. Cleveland rocks.
Cleveland. Oh.
Cleveland rocks. Cleveland rocks.
Won't the sing with me?
Talking Cleveland, Ohio tonight, the RNC. Day two, Make America Work Again, although from our accounts in the first half of our analysis and reaction, that's not what they talked about. Instead, they talked about Make America Hate Hillary Some More. Seems to be what it was. Which I guess is what, you know, that's what you get. Big day today for the Illinois delegation, because not only did they play a role in making Donald Trump the nomination for the Republican Party. They also were breaking news at the breakfast this morning. A lot going on. Most importantly, though, no Stacey Dash. Ridiculous. Paris Schutz from Chicago Tonight joins us now from Channel 11 WTTW. He is out in Cleveland. Paris, no Stacey Dash. What happened?
Well, Justin, yeah, no Stacey Dash. I'm still recovering from it. I think we were just a little too much for her to handle.
Yeah, right.
But we did have Corey Lewandowski.
Yeah, he made some news tonight.
He did. He came to the Illinois delegation and he spoke very highly of his former boss Trump. But he did say that whoever wrote the portion of Melania's speech that perhaps was very similar to Michelle Obama's speech should be held accountable. Making no way that I was held accountable for the mistakes I made. So whoever did this should be held accountable, which kind of contrasts with the Trump reaction, saying, nothing was ripped off. Nothing was plagiarized. So there was some interesting news this morning.
You know, I got to say, it's amazing for you guys in Cleveland. I mean, the reporters, I mean, we talked at what? I mean, it's 11:39 in Cleveland
right
now. Last night at the same time we talked, it hadn't even broke yet, the plagiarizing stuff. We talked before that.
Yeah,
you guys are on the bus
home.
You get to relax
right
in the hotel for a second. Boom, there's news that has to be reported on at first
right
thing in the morning with Corey Lewandowski coming through. I mean, that's a tough schedule for you guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had about a 6-hour window to sleep, and I slept for about 5:45 of that. And you wake up and you see this news. I mean, obviously, I didn't remember Michelle Obama's speech 8 years ago, but, some national reporter had broken that. And then Corey Lewandowski was a surprise. I mean, no one knew that. We were expecting Stacey Dash.
You're going to ask her what she thought, right?
Right, we were going to ask Stacey Dash what she thought of it, but no, we had to be back there at about 7:30, 8 a.m. bright and early, and it was a surprise. It was a last minute addition to the schedule to have him there, and it's surprising how supportive he was of Trump, given what happened, and he had urged the Illinois delegation to encourage more people. He says Illinois is going to be in play in November. Now, it hasn't gone Republican in a presidential election since 1992. So that it certainly would be a very historic election if that changed this year.
Do you believe him as someone who covers the political landscape here? Or is he just sort of going from delegation to delegation saying, yeah, your fill in blank is going to be in play here?
Yeah, no, he's going from delegation to delegation to try and gin up support. And I mean, there were delegates that asked him, well, is Trump going to come to the suburbs of Chicago? Is he going to come to Springfield? Is he going to come to Carbondale? And Lundell said, oh, yeah, yeah. So he's going to go to all those places. And I'm sure that he gets the same questions at all the, the delegation breakfast that he speaks at. So, yeah, it's a way to gin up support and to thank the delegates for the work that they've done. I mean, these delegates, a lot of them are new to politics. They've given up a lot of their time and their money to be involved in this. And coming to Cleveland was no cheap affair. They spent thousands of dollars to be a part of this. So this was kind of his way of thanking them.
So let's fast forward to the actual convention floor today. They did the nomination process,
right,
and they elected Donald Trump as their nominee for Republican candidate for president. Talk about that. I mean, Illinois, we were kind of joking right before the news that you heard all these different states really put on their tourist hat. They'd be like, oh, the state of Kentucky, where we've got the greatest bourbon. It's just like that. And you get to Illinois, and Schneider's like, the state of Illinois that's got the greatest governor. And we're like, yeah, all right. That seems strange.
I guess it's the new motto of Illinois. Illinois, land of the greatest governor.
But it was a little, it seemed, how did the crowd, I mean, obviously the crowd's really not paying attention.
They cheered around her. I mean, there was a nice kind of warm applause and cheer for him, and maybe a recognition that he's a Republican in a very Democratic state, trying to fundamentally, change the way things have been governed for several years. So it seems like there was a warm acknowledgement of that. I talked to some delegates, and they said that it was a euphoric moment. They said that this was the pinnacle of their experience, being able to cast their delegate vote for Donald Trump. And as Cruz had 9 delegate votes and Kasich had 6. And so it wasn't, a lot of times it's a unified vote for the nominee, but that's if the candidates, release their delegates, which of course they didn't do in this case.
Right.
So in many states, it was a split delegate vote. And you may see in the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, Bernie Sanders. I think the hope is that Sanders releases his delegates to Hillary Clinton so she has unanimity in every state.
It's interesting because Bruce Rauner obviously gets the warm reception. He didn't show up for the convention. But it seems like he would be in a space where he could be one of these speakers that grabs attention to be up on the stage and the national spotlight for the Republican Party. That's good for everybody involved.
It certainly fits the narrative of, coming into a Democratic stronghold and trying to radically change, the way things have been done. But I will say, so he's been nowhere near, but who was here was Kirk Dillard, was the House Minority Leader. But he's nowhere near the convention center. He's in Cleveland going from party to party to party, raising money, going business parties, lobbyist parties. And his whole thing is like, for 48 hours, I am going to be raising money so we can fund races for the state house to try and have Republicans chip into Speaker Madigan's supermajority. So he's had a presence here. But no, Governor Rauner might have been warmly received here. I think Republicans are aware of what's going on in Illinois and might see Rauner as a sympathetic figure,
because there are Democratic supermajorities in Illinois.
Right. So for you, I mean, obviously you're in the bus ride home. I'm making your way back to the hotel now.
I stopped. I'm at the CNN Grill.
Oh, you are?
So Terry Moran is here, and Wendy Malick, the actress of Just Shoot Me, is here, and Harry Hamlin.
Sure.
And Rick Santorum.
So the CNN Grill is a great
collection of people ever.
Yeah, it's a great thing. I'm glad you're there. I feel bad that we're talking to you here in Chicago. You should be, you know, mucking it up with the Just Shoot Me crew.
Well, I was gonna talk to her about my favorite episode of Just Shoot Me. She's hanging out.
Go ahead.
I think he's still married to Lisa Rinna, but I can't remember.
What's in line for the breakfast tomorrow? I mean, what do we know about the Illinois delegation and what they got going on tomorrow?
Well, they're going to hear from Daryl Issa, who's a congressman from California, who's been one of Hillary Clinton's biggest critics. The theme will probably be sort of the questions surrounding Hillary Clinton and her behavior with emails and with the Clinton Foundation. But, you know, they might throw us for a curveball like they did today. We had no idea that Corey Lewandowski was going to be here. So it's anybody's guess. And, of course, at the convention is Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz speaking. And, it's going to be very interesting to see if they embrace Donald Trump lock, stock, and barrel after, saying it was a bruising primary is understating it. You know, it's hard to just do a 180 and see these men sort of saying, nope, now Trump is our guy after how bitter it was. So
yeah,
that'll be the interesting thing. And then, of course, Mike Pence is tomorrow.
Yeah, that'd be good. All right, so Paris, thanks so much for joining us. Paris Schutz, he's a political reporter in Cleveland for Channel 11 for WTTW Chicago Tonight, and he took some time out from hanging with Harry Hamlin to check in with us tonight. We appreciate it, Paris. Thanks. Go get him.
I appreciate it. All right, we'll talk soon. Thanks.
All right, talk to you, bud.
Bye.
Looking forward to day three of the RNC. Vice presidential candidate Mike Pence will take the stage. So we're going to do things a little differently on the download tomorrow night. I'm still trying to figure it out because it's really about when he goes on stage. But I think I'll get some people in studio. Chris Roebling will come in. We'll get sort of a panel going, and we can talk about what to expect from the speech, play the speech live, probably about a 15, 20-minute speech. And then come back and do some analysis afterwards. So we'll do that tomorrow on the download. And then do the same thing on Thursday for Donald Trump. I'm looking forward to this. I mean, you know, I like the fact that we really get a chance to hear from Republicans and what they thought of the speeches tonight. And especially in a case where we didn't see him. You know, I hate it. I'm not a big fan of talking about something that we didn't get a chance to take in, you know, especially when there's so many speeches and we do, you know, Chris Christie or talk about Donald Trump Jr.'s speech. But we were on the air. So it's always harder to not be there and not sort of absorb it or at least watch it on TV and be like, take notes and be able to talk about it. I don't like that. But so tomorrow will be fun to be able to watch the speech, Mike Pence's speech here in studio. Maybe we could... I mean, we'll skip Ted Cruz and we'll skip Marco Rubio and that kind of stuff. We'll still do the same kind of thing where we have analysis and reaction on those speeches, but we'll play live Mike Pence, which should be fun, right?
Be great.
I'm looking forward to that.
A little worried about the Donald. I don't know, yeah. Like, he's going to go. He's going to, I mean, he'll be up there for...
You're worried that he's just going to keep going?
Yeah. We'll not be able to be... They'll be off the air when he finishes. It'll be anticlimactic.
We'll just, in the middle of it, yeah, we'll just make the transition. Patty will come in. Could be a long speech. His speech tonight he did on the satellite that we played for a second in the newscast was classic Trump. where and it's just something about him that, you know, even when he seems to be scripted in big moments, he's not. It's a train of thought kind of speech.
Mm-hmm.
You know who was really good at that, or I should say was really bad at it, was Pat Quinn. You know, early on when he was governor, he'd do a State of the Union or State of the State. He'd be like, yeah, so, you know, and then we got to get education. You know, education's kind of a big deal. So we'll get education. And after education, you know, we got to figure out how to deal with the infrastructure. Infrastructure's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, okay, is there a, like, a, you, is someone writing these for you? Just, you kind of feel like you're the principal at the front of the assembly. And Donald Trump has that same vibe to him. He's just so much more bombastic. And he's very good at, and it must be his television performances and stuff, where he'll get into something, and I'm figuring out his speech pattern where he'll go, you know, that's the thing about, you know, we want to figure out education. I'll tell you, education is very, very important. He'll do that, and he'll say, it's going to be the best. It's going to be the best. Education's going to be the best.
Yeah.
It's like he almost learns how to, at the end of his rant, to punch it with, and it's going to be great.
Right.
And it's going to be awesome. So, that's his speech pattern.
It's a wonderful tactic.
Yeah, I actually, it's great. He'd be a great principal. And the next thing you know, and then we're going to have the marching band's going to come in here, and that marching band's going to be great.
I can't remember what I was watching, maybe CNN or some, I don't know, some news program, and they had a psychiatrist or some psychologist, the doctor who was talking about Donald Trump and his speeches and how what Donald Trump does is just amazing. He knows all the five things to go to that essentially tricks people into believing whatever he says.
He's figured out how to do public speaking.
So yeah,
he's really good at he would be a great guy in motivational speaking seminars.
He's just like magnificent.
He'd be the third guy before Tony Robbins. You know, you'd be like, you know, you have a line of six guys at the Rosemont.
Yeah, Ditka
theater.
Usually is in those.
Exactly, Urlacher shows up. Hey, I didn't have hair once, now I have hair. So what's up? Yeah, give it up for Brian Urlacher. Yeah, but Trump would be the headliner. But even before that, he'd be second. He'd be second behind Tony Robbins. So I'll tell you right now, you're a winner. Be a winner. You know, I was trying to think of a line. I couldn't put it together for the carryout, but it's not too often that the winners in our society, and I kind of think of the winners, like Tom Brady is considered a winner because he's won a ton of, I think of sports figures.
Yeah.
They're almost always the last ones to tell you that they're winners.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see Tom Brady being like, well, I'll tell you right now, I'm a winner. I won a ton of Super Bowls. It's just not in their nature. They win by example. And so that's the one thing about Donald Trump that I always kind of scratch my head. Rarely ever has a winner actually said, I'm a winner. Who says that? The guy from Karate Kid? You know what I mean? You're a winner, Johnny.
What about people that wear their, does Tom Brady have all his Super Bowl rings on his hands?
Oh, yeah, yeah, like a Shula.
Yeah.
Like a Don Shula.
Or so Ditka. Is that just
the way?
But
Ditka never says I'm a winner. Does he? He never comes out. Ditka never goes, I'm a winner. Come eat my chops. No, he doesn't. He doesn't do that. I mean, people say that about him. He may tell you what it takes to be a winner.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But he never says, "I'm a winner." You want a winner? And I guess he's not running for president
yet.
2020, 2024. He's more. I see Dick as more of a 2032 kind of guy. Ladies and gentlemen, can you believe it? Mike Ditka, 2032. So. All right, so Patty Vasquez coming up next. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Coming up, Patty Vasquez, pretty late. Patty Vasquez.